Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And it's so important to us in Santa Cruz because 21 feet sea level rise, well, you figure it out. I won't be living in Seabright.
I'm staying. I'm not going out here.
Richard Stockton with a minute from planetcruise.org.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. The president used the R word today.
Today's job data reflects the fact that our economy is in a recession.
533,000 jobs lost last month, according to the latest unemployment report. Neil Boyle lost his job in March, and things aren't looking good for his coworkers.
I've seen a plant manager. He said their company doesn't expect to turn around till at least the end of next year, at least. That their forecasts are very dim. It looks really bad. It looks like it's going to get worse.
I'm Dan Revive. A professor at Harvard Business School, Clayton Christensen, is in touch with many corporations and finds deep pessimism for the next 12 months or more, and there's nothing to stop layoffs from snowballing.
I wouldn't be surprised if unemployment hits 15%
in the coming year.
A record 1 in 10 American homeowners are at least a month behind on their mortgage or in foreclosure. Jay Brinkman with the Mortgage Bankers Association.
This is the highest that we've seen. The percent of loans in foreclosure set a new all-time record.
And we're not taking out loans for much else.
The Federal Reserve has been doing the math and finds that American consumers cut back on their borrowing in October. Consumer credit fell at an annual rate of just over 1.5%. Compare that with growth of just over 3% in September. This report doesn't measure real estate borrowing. It suggests many of us are so concerned about the recession, we're not willing to spend as much or borrow as much while we wait to see how bad things get out there. Sam Litzinger, CBS News, Washington.
The auto chiefs have wrapped up their hearings in Washington, where they're seeking federal loans.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House, where President Bush makes it clear he'll support a government bailout for U.S. automakers, but only if they prove their companies will not only survive, but thrive.
And it's important to make sure that taxpayer money be paid back, if any, is given to the companies.
He says he's concerned about the car companies and the people who work for them, but he also says he's concerned about the taxpayer money the automakers want.
O.J. Simpson is going to prison for at least 9 years, possibly more than 30. He was sentenced today in Las Vegas, where CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman joins us live.
And Cammie, for O.J. Simpson, his legal luck finally ran out here in Las Vegas.
The first-degree kidnapping with use of a deadly weapon. A fixed term of 15 years.
2 months after he was found guilty of armed robbery and kidnapping, the former football star was sentenced. One by one, Judge Jackie Glass read the sentences. Moments earlier, Simpson, near tears, insisted he did not want to hurt anyone.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal anything from anybody.
The sentence was harsh, but it could have been worse. Simpson could have been sentenced to life in prison. Live at the county courthouse in Las Vegas, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
The Associated Press reporting 5 Blackwater security guards have been indicted in connection with the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqis last year. On Wall Street, the Dow finished up 259 points. This is CBS News.
CNN, Thursday night, December 11th. From the network that brought you the award-winning Planet in Peril, the investigation continues. Planet in Peril, battle lines. Anderson Cooper.
I'm Anderson Cooper off the coast of Cape Town, South Africa.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, deep in the forest of Cameroon.
And Lisa Ling.
I'm Lisa Ling in Taiwan.
Take you to the front lines of the ultimate battles over our natural resources. A CNN worldwide investigation. Planet in Peril, battle lines. December 11th, 9 p.m. Eastern on CNN.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
A regional director of Homeland Security has been arrested in Massachusetts, charged with repeatedly hiring illegal immigrants to clean her home. The woman's job called for her to stop illegals from entering the country. An 80s icon could be headed to jail, as Larry Miller reports from London.
The 80s singer Boy George can no longer sing.
I'm a man without conviction.
Because a London court convicted him of falsely imprisoning a male escort, handcuffing him to his bed, to punish the escort for refusing to have sex with him. The escort claimed the former culture club lead beat him with a metal chain when he tried to escape from the apartment. Boy George will be sentenced next month, but the judge warned, be ready for jail. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Oprah Winfrey's been named the most powerful woman in entertainment by The Hollywood Reporter. Her company made $345 million last year. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
How to perform holiday magic. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get exclusive holiday decorations like stunning Christmas trees, ornaments, lights, and more. Step 2. Create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
Right now, get up to 50% off select holiday decorations at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Fresh on the air in Boston, Massachusetts. We're getting great response from New England. Good to have you along with us. On our program today, Robert Perry will kick us off in just a moment. He's the journalist who publishes at consortiumnews.com. Later this hour, Tyson Slocum, the energy expert at Public Citizen, will be with us. We'll talk about the fading hopes for a Motown bailout and why there isn't a plan coming from the government. We made the industry leaders who have failed submit a plan. And why doesn't the Congress offer a plan as to how Detroit could earn a bailout and move into the green economy? We'll be discussing that later this hour. Next hour, Christopher Fettweis returns to our program. He has taught at the Naval War College. He is a military guy. But he wrote a powerful book published earlier this year called Losing Hurts Twice as Bad, and it discusses exit strategies from Iraq. And we're going to talk with Christopher Fettweis about his current thoughts about the Obama team, including General Jim Jones and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Those are all designees, of course. That's coming up next hour. Along with Ari Melber from The Nation, he traveled on the Obama team, the plane, on the campaign trail for much of the campaign season. And he is the Netroots guy from The Nation. We'll talk a little bit about change.gov. That's the website where Obama is directing citizens for their ideas about change. And we understand that two key ideas were scrubbed from the site shortly after they were posted by citizens. So we'll talk about that. And also ask the question, when will Obama name an actual progressive to a cabinet-level post? And there's one in the offing. So we'll share that with you a little bit later. And Brad Friedman returns after a couple of weeks off, the proprietor of bradblog.com, citizen journalist and election protection activist. And we're going to talk about Humboldt County, where we're on the air at KGOE in Eureka. And they had an interesting anomaly discovered as they certified the November 4th election results. And a citizen team proved that Diebold's tabulators are not accurate. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can call in anytime, toll-free, at 888-5-PETER-B. We do pause for callers. All you got to do is get on the line when something, either causes you to ask a question or forces you to make a comment. My number is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Parry, P-A-R-R-Y, is a regular contributor to our program. He is a longtime investigative reporter for Newsweek, Frontline, the Associated Press, and also worked for Bloomberg. He's now independent and publishes at the nonprofit website, consortiumnews.com. Bob Parry, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
And I know you hail from the Boston area.
That's right.
So turn on your accent a little bit and talk to the Chowderheads.
Wicked good, huh?
That term wicked has come up quite a bit in conversations with Bostonians this week. So that's a favorite adjective, huh?
Yeah, well, of course, I grew up a bit west of Boston, closer to Worcester, so some of the real pure great Boston accents I never quite picked up, but mm-hmm. a few words like Northborough, my hometown was I always pronounced it without the R's in it, so
Northborough.
Northborough, yeah.
Northborough.
So, there are a few things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you with us. We're really pleased to be on the air in Boston. And I want to direct people to your website, particularly our new listeners in Boston, because you and others publish a lot of great independent and enterprise work there. And I am very pleased to have you contribute to our program and likewise to support the work you do at Consortium News. Now, you have been sharply critical of some of the picks that President-elect Obama has made for his foreign policy team, in particular, Robert Gates. And we had our mutual friend and a contributor to your site, Ray McGovern, on the program earlier this week. And he referred to the piece that you had published on Monday regarding the way that Robert Gates accepted the rather unusual offer from the Obama administration to hold him over as at least the first Republican appointee to the Obama top-level team.
Well, one of the odd things about Gates is that he comes across very mild-mannered and is very popular with the Washington establishment, in part because of the way he treats people. Often he can be very ingratiating. But he also is a very ambitious person and thinks quite highly of himself. And he's been that since his earliest days at the CIA, when people like Ray McGovern were his bosses, basically,
yeah.
Mel Goodman. What they saw was an extremely ambitious fellow who was always looking for how to get ahead. And he began to collaborate. There's still a lot of mysteries about some of his early dealings on behalf of the Republicans going into the 1980 election, when he was, according to some accounts, essentially betraying President Carter and helping out the Republicans behind the scenes to frustrate the Iranian hostage negotiations that Carter was trying to carry out.
The October surprise, yes.
Right. Gates had been he had been assigned to the National Security Council for a while and then was moved back to the executive assistant to the director, Stansfield Turner. And according to a number of accounts, including a remarkable document that the Russian government sent to the U.S. Congress in 1993, Gates was part of this effort to essentially sabotage Carter's negotiations. So there's always been that mystery. But whether that's true or not, he certainly rose very quickly in the Reagan administration under Bill Casey, mm-hmm. who was Reagan's CIA director. And he was put first in charge of the analytical division, where he began to savage the idea of honest, objective analysis. He's probably the action officer, if you want to put it that way, of the politicizing of U.S. intelligence. He basically got people to give the policymakers the intelligence they wanted to hear, not what was necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
One of his big things was to savage the so-called criminologists, the guys who were following the Soviet Union and who were detecting signs of the Soviet collapse,
yeah.
in the 70s and early 80s. But Gates wanted to have a different answer, which was that the Soviets were all-powerful to justify the military buildup under President Reagan and to justify some of the interventions in the Third World. So the CIA started giving this false analysis, which turned out to lead the CIA into missing the collapse of the Soviet Union. So Gates has that kind of history, and he was involved in the Iran-Contra scandal,
mm-hmm.
And that cost him his first shot at maybe being CIA director in 87 when when Casey died. He was tied. He was tied into the Iraq Gate scandal, the secret arming of Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. So he's had this sort of history. Yet because he's very well connected inside Washington, he always gets a pass. And even to this point, when he had a lot of friends who in the Washington establishment who essentially convinced President-elect Obama to keep him on.
Yeah. Now, Bob, a process question I haven't been able to get a straight answer to, and there's no prize here if you get it right or wrong, but does he have to be reconfirmed if he's been confirmed as Secretary of Defense? So the fact that he's not resigning, doesn't that mean he just stays on and there's no Senate confirmation required?
Well, I'm not quite sure. It's a good question. I do think that there would be a second round of confirmation. But I've not really investigated that myself.
Yeah, okay. So when we size this up, I'm really concerned. Jeremy Scahill was on the program with us earlier this week, and he put it very succinctly. You know, Obama says he's got this cabinet where dissent will be welcomed. But he didn't bring any dissenters in on the most critical issue, the war in Iraq. Everybody on his team, with the exception of the president-elect himself, really gave full support to Bush's war. And most of them, Emmanuel, Clinton, Biden, have never really apologized or acknowledged the error of their votes. And so when he talks about this cabinet of rivals and how it's going to bring debate and sharp contrast and give him, you know, more than groupthink, doesn't he have to expand the group to include some people who don't all think the same?
Well, it seems like the only people being excluded from this government are those who were right about Iraq, who said don't go in, that the intelligence is bad. And there were a lot of people like that who had either wisdom from their sense of how government should behave with each other, that is, they respected international law, or they were looking at or looking more deeply into the intelligence and saw the weakness about the WMD. But there was also a remarkable concern in one of the papers that one of the reasons that some people did not want John Kerry to be made Secretary of State was that would have opened up the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee for that radical Russ Feingold, who was one of the guys who was right about Iraq.
Yeah.
So it's almost like if you were right about Iraq, you're almost disqualified from any serious position in Washington, even under the Obama administration. Probably the guy that was the most skeptical of the war, though, was General James Jones, the Marine general. And he, while certainly no liberal, he was concerned about the rush to war. He was not a fan of the neocons.
Mm-hmm.
There was one account where he blew up at a dinner party with Paul Wolfowitz, one of the lead neocons. So, but that was more of a lions for lambs sort of position.
And he didn't resign or publicly offer any criticism. And Bob, I don't like to necessarily disqualify people simply based on associations. But this is the second time a new president will come in, appoint a first national security advisor who has to resign from the board of Chevron. and I'm sorry, I'm uncomfortable with that. He's also an advisor to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He's on the board of Boeing. And so I don't see this as change. And I'm not trying to overemphasize the marketing term that was used to brand the Obama campaign. But again, if we're looking for dissenting voices, we need some people with a history of disagreeing with the central conventional wisdom.
Yeah, the C word that we got, we thought we were getting change and we got continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to someone who said, well, why would you want continuity with the Bush administration?
Yeah.
It would be like Lincoln wanting continuity with the Buchanan administration. There are sometimes you really do need to have a break with a failed presidency, and if this one wasn't a failed presidency, I'm not sure what was.
Yeah, we'll take a break and return. Robert Perry with us. Visit his website at consortiumnews.com. They've got their end-of-the-year fundraiser underway, and they need your help. And if you can write a check or offer a contribution, I'll be much obliged. Go to the website now, consortiumnews.com. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
General Jones to you. We continue our conversation with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. And Bob, just over a week ago, this incredible attack on Mumbai, India, and we're learning more about it. One of the 10 or so gunmen was captured and apparently has talked quite a bit. He's linked to Lashkar-e-Taiba, or Taiba as some Pakistanis pronounce it. And that is a fringe Islamic group with original ties to Pakistan's intelligence outfit, the ISI. They claim to be apart now. But as you look at this, do you see it as blowback from Pakistan's support of these various cutout groups and essentially warlord types that they have used strategically over the years? Or do you see this as an effort perhaps by the Pakistani military to create a provocation that would allow them to once again dispose of a civilian government and rule from the military?
Well, you know, clearly the whole history of the United States' relation with Pakistan going back now to that period of the early 1980s has been disastrous. I mean, you can take it back to the early, to the late 70s when the time of the Afghan invasion by the Soviets. The policies have been overwrought in terms of the threat, supposed threat at that point from the Soviets. The Soviets were in rapid decline. It's one of the problems when Robert Gates was at CIA exaggerating the Soviet threat.
Right.
And that helped feed this concept of supporting these Islamic radicals, including, as we know, Osama bin Laden was one of our key allies in bringing in Arabs from the Middle East into Afghanistan to fight the Soviets. That became such an important factor for U.S. policy that it distorted everything else and really did put us on a path for the mess that we now have. And as part of that, the Pakistanis were allowed to develop a nuclear bomb. One of the great scandals of the Reagan administration, in my view, was that it turned a blind eye to the Pakistanis as they worked on a nuclear bomb as part of the payoff to get the Pakistanis to help the United States help Osama bin Laden and his friends. It was a crazy policy. And some of the CIA people who were suppressed by Gates were also talking about the proliferation problem. They were talking about this, that the Pakistanis were moving aggressively to get a nuclear bomb, and they were suppressed because that did not fit with the political interests of the Reagan administration. So you have a lot of these problems that have gotten worse and worse in the last decade or two. They were started by misguided policies and falsified intelligence from that period of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that kind of echoes Bush's comments this week in his exit interviews. Well, this economic meltdown's not my fault. It started 10 or 15 years ago when my daddy was president.
Well, it's always nice to see a loyal son, isn't it?
It sure is. Bob, one more item. You have a post at consortiumnews.com December 5th about these new tapes that have been released by the LBJ Library. And I must confess, I've made a few trips to Austin over the last few years, and I always carve out some time to go there, mainly to hear the recordings. There's this one powerful recording of LBJ talking to Everett Dirksen, and their two voices are just so special. It's really worth hearing. Now, they've released some new tapes, and the irony is that this is a tape of LBJ talking to Richard Nixon, and Nixon knew about the LBJ taping system, which is why he installed a better one in the Oval Office, and it brought down his presidency. But these tapes are very interesting because they kind of show that Nixon was willing to lose a war to win an election, if I can paraphrase John McCain, 08.
Well, he was willing to get a lot of Americans killed to win an election. Basically, what happened in 1968 was this effort by the Nixon campaign to undermine the peace talks that Johnson had begun. The fear among the Republicans was that a successful peace talks would have catapulted Vice President Humphrey to victory. Nixon would have lost again. So there were these back channel contacts between the Nixon campaign and the South Vietnamese to get the South Vietnamese to boycott the Paris peace talks, which they did, mm-hmm. and sank them. The peace process was destroyed. Nixon hung on to win a narrow victory, and the war continued for 4-plus years, and some 20-some thousand American soldiers died.
I want people to read all about it at consortiumnews.com, and we'll give you a little blast from the past here as we run to a break here. Robert Perry, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
At our convention, Miami and L.A., a campaign across the USA. Let me make this perfectly clear. Let me stick it in your ear. They said, hey, babe, make a date with the Watergate. My fellow Americans, I said, hey, honey, make a date with the Watergate. And Martha Mitchell says, do.
Tyson Slocum from Public Citizen will talk about a Motown bailout next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by New York Life Insurance Company. Life insurance from New York Life is one of the most selfless gifts you can give your family. That's why New York Life is the company you keep. I'm Charles Osgood. Technology has been developed to complement and assist the workings of the human brain as we work with computers, the internet, and all those digital variations that are now so much a part of our lives. The technology keeps changing as new ways keep being found to expand the digital universe. But something else is going on, too. Just as the machines are changing to accommodate us, our perception is changing to accommodate the machines. Dr. Gary Small, a psychiatrist at UCLA, says it is entirely possible that in this new cyber-digital universe, all those hours spent online are rewiring the circuitry of the human brain. That story after this.
Hi, this is Sally Field. I always thought calcium and vitamin D and exercise would keep my bones healthy, but I got osteoporosis anyway, so my doctor started me on once-monthly Boniva, and he told me something important. Boniva works with your body to help stop and reverse bone loss.
Boniva ibandronate sodium is the prescription tablet for postmenopausal osteoporosis. See our ad in Cooking Light. Don't take Boniva if you have low blood calcium, severe kidney disease, or can't sit or stand for at least 1 hour. Follow dosing instructions carefully. Stop taking Boniva and tell your doctor if you have difficult or painful swallowing, chest pain, or severe or continuing heartburn, as these may be signs of serious upper digestive problems. If jaw problems or severe bone, joint, and or muscle pain develop, tell your doctor.
I've got this one body and this one life, so I'm doing my best to build strong, healthy bones. Ask your doctor if Boniva is right for you.
Boniva, help stop and reverse bone loss. For a free trial offer, call 1-800-4-BONIVA or visit boniva.com.
Surveys have shown that most of us would now rather deal with an ATM machine than a bank teller. Companies much prefer having us go to their website than deal with a living, breathing employee. Employees are expensive. They only want to work 40 hours a week or less, and they require sleep, food, vacations, and benefits. So, wherever possible, they're replacing humans with machines, either answering machines or websites, which sometimes contain pictures of smiling people, just to mollify those yearning for a glimpse of a human face. Dr. Small says our kids are now being digitally hardwired from toddlerhood. Brain circuitry involved in face-to-face contact can become weaker, leading in some cases to social awkwardness and loss of fundamental social skills, like reading facial expressions during social conversations. Have you noticed that a lot of people who deal regularly with the public don't look at you? They look in your direction, but they seem to look right through you as if they were robotic androids. I'm really here, you know that? And I know you're really there because I can see you on the radio. Not very many people can do that anymore. The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays 3 to 5 p.m. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show, so please, if you tune in and hear basketball, listen in on Sundays from 3 to 5, The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Princess Monterey Whale Watching on Old Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. Remember, if you hear basketball during my show on Saturday, tune in Sundays 3 to 5 for The Sheila Show. See ya.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Ah, but pappy, it's a hybrid Lincoln. And I drove it all the way from Detroit to Washington and left my corporate jet behind.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and the Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A Vitamix look like a pup's. Got 8 cylinders and used them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall. With a 4-barrel carb and a dual exhaust, with 4-11 gears, you can really get lost. Got safety tubes, but I ain't scared. The brakes are good, tires fair.
Tell it, Commander.
I was out of San Pedro late one night, the moon and the stars were shining bright. We was driving up great fine hill passing cars, but they was standing still. All of a sudden, in the wink of an eye, Cadillac sedan passed us by. I said, boys, it's marvel to me. By then, the taillight was all you could see. Now the fellas ridden me for being behind, so I thought I'd make the Lincoln unwind. Took my foot off the gas, and man alive, I shoved it on down into overdrive.
Let's talk about Motown and Detroit's alleged need for a bailout. My lines are open for you this half hour at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We're scheduled to talk with Tyson Slocum, who is a fascinating, well-informed man who runs the Energy Desk. I don't know his exact title, but he's at Public Citizen, and their website is citizen.org. We can't reach him right now, so he may check back with us during this half hour. But if not, we've got plenty to talk about when it comes to Detroit and the problems that they are facing. And as you've heard, I am kind of out of step. I was listening to Tom Hartman and Ed Schultz this week, and they're both way on board with a bailout for Detroit. And I understand the case they make. I understand that allowing General Motors to go into bankruptcy is extremely risky, and it may not come back. And I recognize the potential harm to the labor force, including members of the United Auto Workers. And I'd just like to tell you that I have my own connection to the UAW in the past. Tom Hartman, Peter Werby, Mike Malloy, and I, along with others like Tony Truppiano, were hosts on a radio network that some of you may recall from the turn of the century, this past one. not the one from 1899 to 1900. I wasn't there for that one. But the UAW bought a radio network and called it IE America. And I was one of the hosts there along with the other people I mentioned. And so I have great loyalty to the auto workers, if only for that. I also have friends and relatives in Detroit and in Ohio whose incomes are either directly or indirectly linked to the big three automakers. And so it's not something that I say lightly when I tell you that I'm not buying what they're selling, whether it's a Hummer or a bailout. I don't believe the sky is about to fall over southern Michigan. And I think these executives, while they're more humble than they were a couple of weeks ago when they came to Washington, have not made the case as to why they deserve a bailout. The best argument they've made is that the banks got bundles of money and didn't even have to prove their problem. That parity argument is the strongest one that I've heard. But it doesn't sway me to throw good money after bad. God, I hate to sound like Senator Richard Shelby. I really do. But here's what I'd like to pose to you, and I want your reaction. I think this whole thing is backwards. When Detroit came to Washington on their corporate jets a couple of weeks back, they should have been told, come back in 2 weeks, and we'll have a plan for you. And if you want taxpayer money, you will sign on to our plan. And instead, they sent these failed auto executives back to concoct a plan of their own. Now, Rick Wagner's gone from saying he'd keep his old salary to saying he's willing to work for a dollar a year. And as you know, they drove hybrids instead of flying. Good PR, but that's neutralized by the ad campaign. The only thing that I see on television for General Motors right now, the Hummer red tag sale. That is clear evidence to me that they don't get it. So, Friday's New York Times says they forgot a couple of things when they drove from Detroit to Washington, like submitting their resignations. And I think that's a good point. But fundamentally, we've got this whole frame backwards. Instead of Detroit setting the terms for its bailout, Washington should be setting those terms. And those terms should include meaningful steps forward to the green economy. And there's going to be pain involved. There is no getting around the reality that layoffs, plant shutdowns, brand cutbacks, all of this is in the future of the auto industry, and one of the big three may not survive. But I don't believe that we can use Band-Aids, bubble gum, bungee cords, and federal money to fix this. All we can do is delay the inevitable. And I don't want a further delay in the transition from the dinosaurs to the green economy. And so, if they asked me, I wish they would, I'd say, Senator, Congressman, here's the way we do this. We say, General Motors, you need $4 billion to get through the end of the year. That's what you're telling us. Well, here are the 10 steps we need. We need Wagoner's resignation. We need a plan to get the Chevy Volt into production in early 2009. I don't want to wait another model year. Get it out there. Now, we also demand that you trot out the EV1 that you killed less than 10 years ago. It's a viable model. It's an electric car that many people would like to purchase. And what I would like to see is a bailout plan where we force Detroit to innovate, but also to bring back things like the electric car that they killed out of self-interest. And say, you've got 6 months to get 30,000 units manufactured and delivered to dealers. And when you do that, we will pre-order, we will subsidize consumers and give them vouchers to buy a new electric car. We will stimulate the demand side for Detroit automobiles. But first, you've got to make a car that people will demand. And so all the hand-wringing that's going on and all the bloviating, some of it coming from the left, some of it coming from pro-labor elected officials and talk show hosts, it all obscures the reality that you cannot simply give them money to sustain the status quo. Now, I'd like to hear your thoughts. My lines are open. We can talk for the rest of this half hour. And I want to know what elements you would put in to a government bailout plan imposed on Detroit. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. For listeners in Boston on AM 1510, our inducement remains for you. We've got a free DVD of Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies. That's the story of the Clint Curtis investigation into the 2000 stolen presidential election in Florida. And all you have to do is call and offer me a comment. If you're in the New England area, we will reward you with a DVD. Again, my number is 888-573-8372. That's 888-5-PETER-B. Now, here's an email that came in from an individual who signs it Jay Shaw. Not sure if it's a male or a female. So, Jay, thank you for your comments. And Jay says that, when you think of a Honda or a Toyota, you think of a car that will go at least 200,000 miles, has good mileage, and high-tech features. And Jay says when you think of a Ford, a Chrysler, or a GM car, you think of a car that may last a maximum of 100,000 miles. It guzzles gas, it's bulky, it's heavy, and has low-tech features, including poor road handling. And Jay is making the point here that the big three are America's car companies, no matter how pitiful their cars may be. So all of us must cheer for them and urge them to make these changes in order to make a comeback. If the big three sink, we can expect that it will not only be American industry to go under, it will not be the only American industry to go under. America must not give up ever, and we must fight to lead the world in making innovating cars once again. Well, I understand your point here, Jay, but they're not going to do it voluntarily. And I don't mean to harp on this, but how stupid can they be to look at a 41% reduction in sales in the month of November and sit there in Detroit in the Fisher Building downtown and say, yeah, you know what, America wants? Sales sucked in November, so we're going to give them what they want. We're going to give them a red tag discount sale on Hummers. Now, that is just so stupid and counterproductive. There are multiple reasons why people didn't buy cars in November, and it's not all because cars from Detroit aren't good. There are good cars made in Detroit. Not the Hummer, not the SUVs, not the trucks. Those are the profit centers. And I think people would sit still if Detroit said, okay, we're going to retool. We're going to make more fuel-efficient cars, more hybrids. We're going to bring back electric cars, and you're going to have to pay a little more for it. And on that basis, I could see feeding them some federal funds. I'd rather loan it to them. But I also think that those of us who put our money on the line need to get shares in the company. And that relates to a massive restructuring. And the bottom line is that workers are going to be the victims here. We know that. And so instead of throwing money only at General Motors, we've got to provide a cushion for the workers. And that includes the United Auto Workers members, but also thousands, hundreds of thousands of non-union workers in the various part streams that supply Detroit. That's my rant. Let me hear yours at 888-5 Peter B. Here's Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire. Welcome, Brian.
Peter, I couldn't agree with you more. I didn't want to agree with you because I feel like we have to hang on to the manufacturing base that is our automaker industry. They're the big three in Detroit. But at the same time, I think you're exactly right, according to the American Constitution, that our lawmakers write the laws, and that includes the writing of this loan for these automakers there, these so-called productive people there, these CEOs with the corporate jets and the lifestyle of, like, the AIG Bank and all that. They're the same type of people. I put people in quotes, though, sometimes, because the Wall Street bailout, even worse than that, the trillions of dollars. I go by like what Dean Baker said in his article of November 24th, the bear is cool about the Wall Street meltdown, overcoming fears of falling stock prices, which don't really affect everyday Americans' lives in our work and things like that, which these people, their work, their jobs in central, in the Midwest, and all over the country are affected by if Detroit falls, mm-hmm. fails. But you're right. The lawmakers write the loan, and they have to write that they force these automakers to build energy, alternative energy cars, efficient cars.
Because if we don't do that, Brian, you know what we're doing? We're loaning them money for the purpose of screwing workers even further.
Peter, I'm a
that's
veteran.
That's what they're going
to
do.
I've served in the Marine Corps. I've suffered from mental illness. I have to, just to get food stamps for $23 a month in food stamps, I have to fill out all kinds of forms. I have to show them. They have to have access to every bit of my financial information just to get $23 a month in food stamps.
Oh, Brian.
You know, that's the kind of thing we're up, and these people don't want to have, they have to make the plan, because the corporate media, not the Peter B. Collins of this world, the independent media, but the corporate media allows them to have to set this kind of agenda that is so unjust. I wanted to say one other thing. You know, I'm an animal lover, my blind dog here, Casper.
Yeah, hello, Casper.
Yeah, woof, woof. I just was going back through my paperwork there from my Humane Society of the United States, and one of their pieces there, a magazine from summer of 2006, All Animals Magazine. That's the magazine for the Humane Society of the United States. It shows on the front cover, God love them, they're being reunited, a gentleman and his Siberian Husky dog there after Hurricane Katrina. Richard Collar, C-O-L-A-R, and Princess, his Siberian Husky, are reunited in New Orleans' Lower Ninth Ward. And for the first time in years, I just cried openly seeing this picture. These are this is what matters in America. This is what has been ignored for at least the last 8 years in America, the people of America. It's disgusting. It's horrible, Peter. But
all right, now
thank you for keeping up the good fight.
I want to get a bailout for your dog, Casper, too, okay?
That's all right.
Hey, thanks for checking in, Brian. Hey, and are you able to pick up 1510 from Boston over the radio?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I can pick it up. I have a little, I can pick it up fine.
Well, then you have earned a DVD. You're one of our longtime online listeners from New England, and you listen to AM 1510. You get a DVD today, okay?
Okay.
So hold on, and we'll set you up with that. We'll take another call here in just a moment at 888-5-PETER-B. Daddy going to take the T-Bird away? Let me know your thoughts about the bailout situation and Detroit's demands. 888-5-PETER-B.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, the holiday season. Poinsettias, holiday bouquets, centerpieces, garland, the scent of pine and spruce. Beautiful. Nothing gets a body and the spirit more than getting flowers. Unless it's giving them, just ask the floral experts at Ferrari Florists and Gifts. Every year, we're as busy as elves helping people send their happiest wishes to friends, family, and colleagues. Everybody loves a gift of flowers. We sure can work some holiday magic to spruce up your home, too.
'Tis the season to send flowers and warm hearts for the holidays. Call Ferrari Florist and Gifts at 831-460-7000. Visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com or stop by our shop at 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Ferrari Florist and Gifts, experts in the art of expression.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's A Pizza Paradise, where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
Peter B. Collins Show with a shout out to O.J. Simpson. He thought what happens in Vegas would stay in Vegas. You got 15 years or more to do. And this song by Jan and Dean from 1963-64 is one of my favorite musical metaphors for Detroit. You don't come back from Dead Man's Curve. And I think they drove around it in a Ford Excursion or a Chevy Tahoe or one of those big gas-guzzling Ram trucks. Yeah, they've been around Dead Man's Curve, and I don't think they're coming back. And that's why I believe that this is the pivot point. This is the moment. This is the crisis opportunity to force Detroit to change its ways. And you're not going to get it with a plan that was written by and for the automakers themselves. And why don't our lawmakers roll up their sleeves? They recognize the risk here. And I'm not, I am not in denial about the potential risk. I do accept that if General Motors goes down, the parts chain that supplies Ford and Chrysler will be put at risk. And I also think it could be cataclysmic for states like Michigan and Ohio that are already in a near-depression economic mode. But I don't think the bailout will prevent that. Not if they don't make fundamental change. And that's why the plan has to come from Washington. And if they want the money, they'll adopt the plan. Dave and Eureka, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter. I think you probably started to make my point here, and that may be your last call of as well, and that is that the automotive industry is in such big trouble, not because of the decisions or the behaviors of the line workers or the assemblers. It is those corporate CEOs with their corporate jets and their mansions in Maui and Hollywood and all that have made the decisions out of pure greed to try to push the Hummer and the GMC van rather than to go with the electric car.
And not only that, Dave, they used their muscle, and they used John Dingell and Senator Levin, and they used lobbyists and the wife of John Dingell, who is a vice president of General Motors. And these people were able to use politics to block change the last 10 years. And there have only been minuscule improvements in the mileage standards, and once that passed through the Congress, the Bush administration undercut those by banning California's exceptions to regulate tailpipe emissions as carbon. And so the games that Detroit has played to continue to manufacture high-profit, high-margin, gas-guzzling vehicles, they are responsible for that. And as long as they don't repudiate it and replace the managers who are responsible for those policies, we won't have any significant change there.
That's exactly what I see happening to happen. I think if Congress is going to hold this industry accountable, they have to say, you CEOs, you have failed miserably. You no longer are employed. Go find another job.
Yeah, I want to put Michael Moore in at GM, even if it's only for a week. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Also in Eureka, listening on KGOE, here's Don. Hi, Don.
Hi, Peter. I totally agree with your approach there and that of Dave from Eureka as well. I think one thing is that we've had quite a history here of lobbyists writing legislation for us, which may be why this bailout is more of the same. But I'd also like to hear more about, if we're going to put any restrictions on them, maybe they ought to bring some of that manufacturing back to the United States. You know, you've been around long enough to know how the lumber industry up here for a long time,
mm-hmm.
whenever anybody launched a complaint against them, they would say, oh, we're going to lose jobs, we're going to lose jobs. And by and large, they got what they wanted, and lo and behold, we still lost the jobs.
Yeah. Well, you make a good point. I recently test drove the Chevy Aveo. Not a bad car. When I looked at the sheet, the information sheet that comes with it, guess what percentage of the parts in that car were made in the United States?
Probably rather few.
It's a single digit. The lowest. The lowest single digit. 1%.
Really?
The Chevy Aveo is mostly made in Korea.
Well, there you go.
And it's a decent little car. It's got an American brand name on it, but it wasn't made here. So you make a good point. I would like to see if we are going to bail out Detroit and preserve manufacturing in this country, then we need to force them to bring it back on shore. And I don't know exactly how you get that genie back in the bottle, but it's certainly worth pursuing. Don, thanks for bringing that up. And thank you for calling and listening this half hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can share a podcast with a friend or loved one. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. This program produced in San Francisco by the amazing Katrina Rill and the similarly amazing Nick Tanum is taking your calls today.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The R word passes the president's lips.
Today's job data reflects the fact that our economy is in a recession.
O.J. Simpson's sentencing.
I'm sorry for all of it.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Even President Bush can't avoid it now after the Labor Department reported the loss of 533,000 jobs in November, pushing the unemployment rate up to 6.7%. Mr. Bush acknowledged we're in a recession and said he's very concerned about all the job losses.
It's going to take time for all the actions we've taken to have their full impact. But I am confident that the steps we're taking will help fix the problems in our economy.
President-elect Obama says each lost job represents a personal crisis for a family somewhere in America, but he believes this crisis is an opportunity to transform and strengthen the economy for years to come. More on the jobs report from CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason.
We had deep losses in the service sector, which, you know, normally doesn't get hit quite this hard, quite this early in the process. Really, we're seeing losses almost across the board and sizable losses, which is telling you that businesses are just, you know, slashing, payroll as quickly as they can as we go deeper into this recession. They don't want to get caught off guard.
Hundreds of employees at Republic Windows and Doors in Chicago were caught off guard, and now WBBM Radio's Bob Roberts tells us they're in a standoff with management.
Told that Bank of America refused to let management pay 60-day severance, accrued vacation pay, or health benefits due under federal law, Republic Windows employees called their union reps and began a sit-in. Vicente Rangel is angry.
Where's the bailout part? The reason that a lot of the taxpayers' money went to the bailout is so that the banks could help this industry, help the companies.
Workers say they had no idea the company was even in trouble till last week. Bob Roberts, CBS News, Chicago.
Now this.
How to perform holiday magic. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get exclusive holiday decorations like stunning Christmas trees, ornaments, lights, and more. Step 2. Create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
Right now, get up to 50% off select holiday decorations at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
You're a small business person, so you're the buyer, the seller, the bean counter, the chief cook, and the bottle washer. You know your best new business comes from your current customers. But what's the best way to reach them? ConstantContact.com, the easy, effective email marketing service. Constant Contact gives you professional online newsletters fast, without any technical skills. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial and plans as low as $15 a month. ConstantContact.com, the smart way to build your business.
O.J. Simpson, convicted of armed robbery and kidnapping in a Las Vegas hotel room, will spend at least 9 years in prison. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman joins us live with the story of today's sentencing.
Bill, when O.J. Simpson entered the courtroom, he briefly smiled. It would be the only smile on his face today. In court, first his attorneys, then Simpson himself, his voice quivering, insisted that he only wanted to recover items that belonged to him.
I just wanted my personal things.
But Judge Jackie Glass saw things differently.
You went to the room.
You took guns.
Simpson could serve as many as 33 years behind bars. There was also a reminder today of Simpson's infamous 1995 murder trial. Fred Goldman, the father of Ron Goldman, was in the courtroom. His reaction afterwards?
This monster is where he belongs, behind bars.
Live at the county courthouse in Las Vegas, Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Reportedly, congressional leaders in the White House are searching for compromise on a bailout for U.S. automakers. There's been a second day of hearings on Capitol Hill. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
Still no plan on the table, but House Financial Services Committee Chair Barney Frank thinks the bleak jobless numbers have convinced lawmakers the industry mustn't fail.
In the midst of the worst economic situation since the Great Depression, it would be an unmitigated disaster.
Warning to Big Three CEOs, $34 billion in loans may be asking too much. Pennsylvania Democrat Paul Kanjorski pressed them for a rock-bottom minimum, about $12 billion, they said.
We can get a hiatus here until March 31st for the new Congress and the new president to act. Is that correct?
It is correct for Chrysler.
Ford and GM, too. There are still critics here, though, who argue capitalism should run its course. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Despite today's dismal job numbers, the stock market managed a gain. The Dow up 259 points to finish the week at 86.35. Analysts say the unemployment report was so bad that it gave traders hope for swift government intervention. The Nasdaq rose 63 points to close above 1,500. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
CNN, Thursday night, December 11th. From the network that brought you the award-winning Planet in Peril, the investigation continues. Planet in Peril, Battle Lines. Anderson Cooper.
I'm Anderson Cooper off the coast of Cape Town, South Africa.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, deep in the forest of Cameroon.
And Lisa Ling.
I'm Lisa Ling in Taiwan.
Take you to the front lines of the ultimate battles over our natural resources. A CNN worldwide investigation. Planet in Peril, Battle Lines. December 11th, 9 p.m. Eastern on CNN.
An official message from Medicare.
Today I found out that my drug plan's monthly premium changed. So I compared other plans and found similar coverage at a better price.
Now's the time to review and compare Medicare prescription drug plans. From November 15th to December 31st, you can even change your plan. Call 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-MEDICARE. Or visit Medicare.gov and use the plan finder to see options in your state. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Coast to coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Those who start wars, never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. Those who write laws, they can't recite them. And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies. It's time to go home.
Nuri al-Maliki says it's time for American troops to go home. Muqtada al-Sadr says it's time for American troops to go home. And your humble host thinks it's well beyond time to start bringing troops home from Iraq. Our musical intro this time from Michael Franti and Spearhead. That's from the most recent CD called Yell Fire. And it sets us up to talk with Christopher J. Fettweiss, formerly a professor of security studies at the Naval War College. He's now at Tulane University in New Orleans. And he's the author of a powerful book published earlier this year with a title inspired by Cincinnati Reds manager Sparky Anderson called Losing Hurts Twice as Bad, the four stages to moving beyond Iraq. Christopher, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for having me back. How you doing?
Well, it's great to talk with you again. I was actually in the process of winnowing through my Bush-bashing bookshelf so it won't collapse. And I came across your book the other day, and I said, I remember this guy. And I recall a remarkable voice, your thoughts as a military man, about the nature of the occupation of Iraq and what we have to do to structure an exit.
Well, so, I'm not a military man, really, but I did teach at the military academy for a while, but I'm a civilian.
Well, but I would put you in that category because you're not a peacenik.
No, I'm a security thinker, that's for sure.
You're not a code pinker.
No, yeah, that's true.
And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to read a little bit here from the last chapter, the conclusion of your book,
okay,
where you make a couple of points. This is a section entitled Out of Iraq. There's a little point you write, keeping a bandage on a wound that refuses to heal. As everyone knows, there are two ways to remove bandages. You can either do it slowly, a little at a time, or act quickly and rip it off all at once. You go on to say, recovery from the consequences of the Bush administration's strategic blunders cannot begin until the war ends. No one, not Americans, not Iraqis, not anyone, will benefit from an agonizing, drawn-out, Vietnam-like exit. Since there is little reason to believe that Iraq will be more ready to stand on its own in one or two or even 10 more years of occupation, there's nothing to be gained by delaying what is now an inevitable U.S. departure. Ripping the bandage off all at once, while frightening and painful, will minimize whatever suffering is on its way. Only when it is off can the United States move into the final stages of post-Iraq recovery. Now, with that in mind, I'd like you just to freshen up your thoughts, and with the Obama administration's national security team pretty well fleshed out, what do you think the prospects are for withdrawal from Iraq? How far and how fast will it occur?
Well, I think they're pretty good. There's been a lot of talk about this national security team and a lot of people just speculating that perhaps they're going to move the president, or this is a signal that the president's moving, the president-elect is moving to the center somehow. But in foreign policy, the president sets the policy, and the president will set the direction of what is going to happen. And his advisors are going to be implementing that as much as advising him. So I think there's a really good chance right now, an opportunity that we will miss at our peril, to get out of Iraq right now while things are relatively calm. They're not very calm. There were still, the other day, 103 bombings in Baghdad in November.
Right.
So it's not like it's exactly peaceful. So
well,
the triumphalism is, I find, offensive.
If we use the Rumsfeld scoreboard, though, things are getting better because only one American died in Afghanistan, and I think we had zero casualties in November in Iraq, the first time ever.
That may be right. I think
Or was it just a handful?
There was a handful. It was lower when you combine the two than in any month leading up to this.
Okay.
Which in Afghanistan happens every year because it's difficult to fight in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And so generally speaking, the fighting season is the spring and the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But, there were a couple of either Marines or soldiers killed yesterday in a series of bombings in Baghdad. But I am not at all comfortable with the triumphalism we hear in some quarters about how now this was somehow worth it. That because the violence has gone into remission, that this was a good thing to have done. And I think we really have to guard against the lesson and coming out of this being that if we stick to it long enough, we can accomplish whatever we set out to do, which was...
Well, Chris, I didn't believe Karl Rove or Karen Hughes going into this, and I don't believe them now trying to spin their way out of it.
No, yeah, I think the right thing to do, where I advise the president, is to get out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And out as soon as possible.
Now, let me ask you about this, because one of the things that Obama has said to try to sell us on his cabinet of rivals is that he wants, you know, a vigorous debate. He even used the word dissent the other day when he introduced the team.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he doesn't have any dissenters on the team. There isn't anybody there who openly opposed the war in Iraq, either before we went in or afterward. You've got Biden, you've got Clinton, you've got Emanuel, you've got General Jim Jones, who apparently has privately expressed his opposition, but he didn't do so publicly. And so when we look at this team being assembled, I like the idea of vigorous debate. But there isn't anybody there who, along with Obama, dissented on the most important question before this incoming administration.
Well, it's true that especially Biden and Clinton didn't vote to oppose the war. On the other hand, they were not, I don't believe either of them would have ordered the operation to go forward if they were in charge. I mean, in the Senate at the time, I think we make too much of the Senate's role in leading up to this war because the Congress doesn't really have much influence over the direction of foreign policy, even though I think we overblow what they can do. In domestic policy, the Congress has much more influence than it does in foreign policy. And generally, if this war was going to happen because the Bush administration wanted it to happen, and the Congress played little role. And there was they gave it a rubber stamp to some degree, but at the time, it wasn't a totally irrational thing to do. What Senator Clinton at the time said, and I think at the time there was a lot to this argument that this war was going to happen unless Saddam Hussein backed down, unless he came to his senses to some degree and took a deal and left.
Well, I recall her contribution to the debate in October of 2002, where she said, "Voting to authorize the president to use military force is the best way to avoid a war with Iraq."
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I'm not swayed by that. I thought that was empty rhetoric that tried to disguise her acquiescence in some sort of a hope that, you know, this double bluff that was developing over weapons of mass destruction, which the president is trying to spin his way out of in these exit interviews now, you know, that somehow this was going to work itself out if we just threatened him more.
No, I understand why that would be frustrating and annoying, but I think but by that time we had already decided to go to war. In effect, I don't think I have to tell you. I thought it was a catastrophic mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But from a strategic perspective, the Bush administration calls the shots here. And they, for better or for worse, and I think for worse, as the book also points out, the executive branch decides nowadays whether we go to war or not. And the legislative branch does little. And I think she's right in the sense that if Saddam Hussein saw that it was united, the problem was he didn't think we were going to attack. And we know now he was telling his generals that we weren't going to attack until even after we had started the war.
Mm-hmm.
If at the time we could have convinced him that the Bush administration was going to do this, maybe that would have made it more likely that he would have taken a deal that would have saved his life and his sons and then taken off.
Well, there certainly were a lot of people in denial at the time, and earlier this year I had a chance to interview Dan Rather, and I said, Dan, you were the last Western journalist to get an exclusive interview with Saddam Hussein, and he told you that he had no WMD. He had just issued a 12,000-page report. The weapons inspectors had been there for months and found nothing. He told you the truth, Dan. Did that ever occur to you that, you know, he really was leveling with you? And Dan just kind of fluffed it off and said, well, you know, that's not really my job. I just ask the questions.
Right, yeah. It's really interesting. In retrospect, there was one person that I know of who believed that there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And there were a lot of people like myself who thought that wasn't enough of a reason to go to war, and I don't think that's why we went to war, essentially.
Yeah.
But there was only one person who was a former U.N. weapons inspector named Scott Ritter,
yeah,
who everyone thought was crazy at the time. And he's saying, you know, I don't think he has anything.
Well, Scott persuaded me before the war because when we talked, his most compelling argument was that it's very clear there are no nukes. That's a
right.
Given.
Yeah.
This mushroom cloud rhetoric is BS. And he said if they have chemical weapons, they're as dangerous as a can of Pepsi because they are so old that their shelf life has expired. And that was a really compelling argument to me.
He was right, and I don't know where he has been since the war. He was much more vociferous and much more, he had a higher profile before the war.
Oh, he's still there. I talked to him 2 weeks ago, and he's very heavily focused on our policy toward Iran now.
He deserves a lot more credit than he has received for being prescient and for understanding what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of people, who, including myself, were totally convinced those weapons were there, but didn't think it was a reason to go to war, thought it was ridiculous. And I don't think many people inside the Bush administration, any complex event like a war is going to have a lot of different causes. There's not just one cause.
Mm-hmm.
But the part of the overall strategy of remaking the Middle East wasn't going to sell to the American people. What sold better was the idea that they were in danger, that the smoking gun could become a mushroom cloud, which, of course, made us all crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The war itself was not so much about the weapons as about an overall strategy against to address the war on terror, which I think was cockamamie to begin with.
Yeah, sure was. We're going to take a break and return. Our guest is Christopher J. Fettweis. His last name is spelled F-E-T-T-W-E-I-S. His book published earlier this year, Losing Hurts Twice as Bad, subtitled The Four Stages to Moving Beyond Iraq. It's from Norton Books. And if you have a question or comment, you can call us now, toll free. It's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out, and catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
Quite continental. Let me tell you about Chavez Jewelry Designs in Watsonville. Have you ever noticed how significant beautiful jewelry can be? A lovely diamond ring, special necklace, sparkling earrings, or a watch can be truly meaningful. When purchasing or repairing precious memories, having a friend in the jewelry business is critical. Chavez Jewelry Designs is your friend in the jewelry business. With Chavez Jewelry Designs, you will find the best products and repair service at the lowest prices. Stop by and check out Chavez Jewelry Designs. Conveniently located at 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville's Crestview Shopping Center. Chavez Jewelry Designs is open weekdays 10 to 7. Call Chavez Jewelry Designs at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. A friend is waiting.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run.
The weather can't seem to make up its mind, but I'm pretty sure the holidays are here. How's it going? This is Adam Booth, owner of Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz. If you need gift ideas for that special runner, walker, or triathlete, we've got you covered. From stocking stuffers to clothes to electronics. Don't know what running or walking shoe they want? What size they wear? Grab a CCR gift card and let them get a custom shoe fitting whenever they're ready. And don't forget about our annual holiday sale and celebration. Saturday and Sunday, December 13th and 14th. 10 to 30% off the whole store. That's right, the whole store. See you at CCR and happy running.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on Dolan Road at Castroville Boulevard, we have a traffic hazard. There is a cow on the side of the road. In Santa Cruz, we have a moving roadway hazard on Highway 152 at Casterly Road. A big rig is moving slowly with a box trailer, so watch out there. Now taking a look at the Hollister-Gilroy area on the southbound 101, just south of Silver Creek Valley Road. There are pedestrians in the center divider. A CHP unit is on the scene there. In weather, we are having the most beautiful day. Highs are in the 70s to mid-60s. Tonight is going to be mostly clear with lows in the 40s. This weekend is also going to be beautiful with mostly sunny skies and highs in the mid-60s. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fantastic Friday, everybody, and stay with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Then we crowd strap. Ram is the hand of Rufus. On top of tons of property damage. Feel like
and it's true.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
My pocket lost his jaw. It is marriage. Like dominoes falling down the flock. Got strung out on the lunch in narcotics. Pulling around like he's in a potato shop.
That's Dr. John, and it's called We Gettin' There. It's about New Orleans recovery. That's from a new CD called The City That Care Forgot. A lot of powerful tunes on there from Dr. John. And joining us from New Orleans as the city recovers is Christopher J. Fettweiss. He's the author of Losing Hurts Twice as Bad, The Four Stages to Moving Beyond Iraq. You a Dr. John fan, Chris?
I am. I've been a long time Dr. John fan.
He's a really cool guy. I've interviewed him four times, and I'm waiting for the time I can interview him when he's not loaded. But
you're going to be waiting a long time. Maybe you get him early enough in the morning.
Yeah, I tried that, too. He said, oh, I just came from the dentist. Here's Steve and Salinas. Join us, Steve. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I sent John Kerry a letter before the 2004 election explaining how he could explain away his vote to authorize war. And it was basically nobody really knew about the weapons, but because of the authorization, before the war started, Saddam Hussein had allowed the inspectors access to anything they wanted to see. Every square inch of Iraq was open to inspection. And had, you know, the Bush administration taken that and run with it, they could have legitimately accepted some credit for removing any doubt. But they didn't. And then,
well, and these comments we're hearing this week from Rove and Bush are such a crock, because there was a defector, a high-level defector in September of 2002, who went to New York and spilled his guts and said there are no WMD. But it didn't fit the policy, you know, paraphrasing the language of the Downing Street memo, and so it was ignored. And to hear Bush dissemble in this interview with Charlie Gibson this week was just kind of a new low point. Chris, what was your reaction?
Well, I had a little bit of a different reaction. I do think that overall the president sincerely believed that there were weapons there. And I think most of the intelligence services I think everybody did. But the idea that was causes belli, that was worth going to war, is the stupid thing to me. And I worry that we're moving toward a situation, as I said before, where now there's going to be an element that thinks this war went really well, and it was and the lesson is that if we stick to it, we can do anything. Rather than stepping back and saying, this was one of the stupidest things we've done as a country.
Go ahead, Steve.
The inspectors had access to everything. They could have found, if there had been anything, they would have been able to find it.
Well, see, I disagree with you, Chris, because I think Bush was hell-bent on invading Iraq. It preceded 9/11, and they were looking for a pretext. And even as late as January 30th of 2003, he was there ruminating with Tony Blair, saying, well, you know, maybe we need to buck this up a little bit and shoot down a plane with UN colors on it. So I don't buy the sense that you know, he was just a victim of bad intelligence.
No, I don't disagree that there was an element in the administration that wanted to attack Iraq all along.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't disagree that the WMD, in a sense, was a ruse or a debate point that was more important to selling the war than a reason for it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Now, we got about a minute and a half remaining. I want to get your thoughts on how far and how fast Barack Obama is going to pull troops out of Iraq. We know that his campaign commitment is only, you know, focused on combat troops, so he's left wiggle room for a residual force. How do you think this is going to take effect, and will we honor the Iraqi demand that we exit completely by the end of 2011?
I think so. I think that the Iraqi moves have given us a little wiggle room, or at least has given political cover to Barack, in a sense, to defend himself from the half of the country at home here that wouldn't like to see a precipitous withdrawal. He'll be able to say, look, hey, the Iraqis want us to go. And it will convince some that that it has to be done. And I think it's going to be done more slowly than I would perhaps like, but consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next few months, I think there won't be, maybe I'm an optimist, but I don't think there are going to be enough forces left there to mount any kind of offensive action in the region. I don't think the Iraqis will stand for it. And I think it can be done faster, and I think perhaps it could be used as a the possibility of withdrawal could be used to get the Iraqis to do some things a little bit more quickly in their own side of it.
And do you think the SOFA that requires U.S. troops to be on base in 6 months and only come out when they're asked, do you think that's going to help?
Quite possibly, because it will force a little bit more progress in the Iraqi Defense Forces, and they've been, by all accounts, making some progress recently.
Yeah.
A slow withdrawal makes people more calm than a precipitous one would. And if that's the case, if that is what has to be done to get the troops out of there, then that's what has to be done.
The book is Losing Hurts Twice as Bad. Christopher Fettweiss, thanks for talking with me again today.
No, thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Amazing Race. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The Detroit CEOs were back on Capitol Hill after hitching a ride on a passing freight train. Well, not quite.
Left Tuesday night and drove until midnight, and then got up at 5:30 the next morning and drove the rest of the way in.
We carpooled. I drove. I drove with a colleague. We split it up about 50-50.
And things still didn't go well.
With the market share that you have, the downward trend that exists, no thinking person thinks that all three companies can survive.
But it went especially hard on Ron Gettelfinger, the head of the Auto Workers Union. Unions exist to raise wages and benefits, but he was there to cut them.
We're going
to
make modifications. We're not opening the contract, if you will. We make modifications, which under our Constitution we have a right to do.
Modifications, huh? They were more like capitulations. They give back a lot of the perks that made unions such a juicy target. The payments to laid-off workers, the generous health care plans. But even that may be too late.
If a UAW membership went in these facilities and worked for nothing, according to our research, it would not help the companies that much.
And now, workers in every other threatened industry will be under pressure to cut their salaries as their economic duty, while they try to fulfill their other economic duty, which is to shop as much as possible.
We're in a race to the bottom, a race to the bottom that workers in no country can win, because there's always somebody else or somewhere else to go that pays less.
Now this.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
This is Dave Ross, on the web at DaveRoss.com.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffee-topia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, coast to coast. Our program's heard up and down the left coast from Monterey all the way to the Canadian border. A shout-out to our weekend listeners in Portland and Seattle. And I'm not forgetting you, Missoula, Montana. And our newest affiliate, AM 1510, the 50,000-watt flamethrower in Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks for joining the party. And you can get on the party line and call us up toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I've been trying to say it slowly for the benefit of our new listeners in Boston. You catch a radio show and you say, wow, that went by really fast. Two breaking news items just to pass along to you. O.J. Simpson getting 15 years. He thought what happened in Vegas was going to stay there, but it looks like he's going to be staying in Nevada as an involuntary inmate there for 15 years. They're filing appeals, but based on what I saw of the court case, they pretty well got him. And I know that there will be many tears shed as I impart this news. Bill O'Reilly is abandoning radio. Oh, oh, doesn't that hurt? Doesn't that just pain you? That's right. At the end of this year, Bill O'Reilly is bailing out. His radio show was not successful in the ratings or as a business, and so he's going to concentrate on his nightly smear effort on Fox News. And I hope you can handle those two breaking stories. Ari Melber joins us now and returns to our program, a frequent contributor over the course of the campaign this year, as he was on the Obama trail for the Washington Independent. And he writes for The Nation and publishes at thenation.com. He is their official Netroots guy. Ari Melber, how are you today?
Doing great. How are you?
Good to have you with us. I'm doing all right. It's been quite a week with so much going on in the news. I wanted to touch on a couple of issues with you here at the beginning and then kind of widen out into a discussion of the Obama cabinet. But there are two things that are kind of sticky right now. One is that Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice, accepted for potential review a case that challenges the fitness of Barack Obama to serve as president because it challenges where he was born. And this is an issue that surfaced during the campaign, and as you know, the Obama team put his birth certificate up on the fact-checking or truth-checking website, and that still is apparently insufficient for some people. And Alan Keyes, the awful television talk show host who used to be on MSNBC, and the guy the Republicans parachuted into Illinois to try to defeat Barack Obama for the Senate a few years back, he is one of the plaintiffs in this case. Now, the Supreme Court met today, and I have not seen any news that they've taken any extraordinary action on this matter. Do you know anything more?
I don't know more about what, of course, the court is doing in their private chambers. There was a report on Mother Jones discussing that while Clarence Thomas has raised some eyebrows here, it is not actually highly unusual for a justice who doesn't oversee a certain circuit to still take an interest and ask for review of this kind of matter. And I really don't expect this would go anywhere. The only other footnote is that Clarence Thomas is the only justice that Senator Obama at the time was when a candidate publicly identified as someone who he thought was unqualified to serve on the court, a much more withering criticism than simply citing ideological disagreement. If anyone's guessed whether that has any effect here.
Now, I missed that. When did Obama question the competence of Justice Thomas? I certainly agree with him. I just never heard it.
It was in his interview with Rick Warren. And it's actually a good thing to go back and take a look at. Because I do think it reflects a bit about how he will approach appointments. He said that he voted against Justice Roberts primarily because of his concerns about his ideology and jurisprudence, and that he would not be strong on checking executive power. And he said he thought that had been borne out by the way Roberts had ruled. But he was careful to say that he thought Roberts was very qualified. He respected his intellect. He, you know, heard him out seriously during the hearings. And he contrasted that to Justice Thomas, but he said, apart from ideology, he simply was not qualified at the time of appointment.
Hmm.
I think that might have gotten Justice Thomas's attention.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that takes me back, because I was actually in the Senate chambers when they were evaluating or attempting to confirm Clarence Thomas. It was before Anita Hill gave her dramatic testimony, but it was a really sorry process because the Democrats really didn't know how to counter this ultra-conservative African-American appointed by George Bush Sr. And it was quite a comedy of errors, I thought, in many respects. But ultimately, he was confirmed, and we're stuck with him for life. Now, Ari, one of the other issues that has surfaced that potentially could prevent Hillary Clinton from serving as Secretary of State is an element of the Constitution that essentially says that as a senator, because she voted for pay raises for cabinet members, now that she's poised to become a cabinet member, that somehow disqualifies her because she voted to increase the salary of a position that she is now nominated to.
Yeah, this is an issue that has arisen before and has been fixed before, although not to everyone's satisfaction, by having Congress come in and pass an after-the-fact piece of legislation to address the underlying concern that the framers had, at least, which is that you shouldn't set yourself up with your legislative power for plum jobs down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the case here. I don't think anyone would seriously entertain it. I find it a little rich and a little sad that after all the constitutional abuses we have seen over the last 8 years, people are focusing and people in the, especially in the television media, are focusing so intently on this, presumably for its sort of man-bites-dog, weird personality narrative.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of more serious constitutional abuse on the list, if that's where we want to put our time, as I think we should.
Well, very well put, and on that score, we bring in John from Brookings, Oregon. John, you're on with Peter B. and Ari Melber. Go ahead.
Hi. See, I'm concerned about the example that people like Cheney have set for our children when he flips people off and says the F word to people, and then the fact that the president very likely has violated the law, and it's a terrible precedent. And I finished the it's called Justice After Bush, Prosecuting an Outlaw Administration by Scott Horton in Harper's.
Yeah, yeah. Wasn't that good?
It was wonderful, but what are the chances? I mean, I don't want to say he's guilty or they're guilty. I'd like to see a full disclosure so that the country can be healed, because if this kind of stuff goes on and we think people don't have to obey the law, I think it's the worst thing in the world for our democracy. I'm very concerned about it.
Well, John, in Scott Horton's article, he makes the point that he doesn't think it's viable to try to investigate every aspect of lawbreaking of the Bush administration.
He chose torture, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pick one thing, but.
Yeah, I'm equally concerned about torture and about the Fourth Amendment rights that were trashed under this FISA reform law that passed earlier this year. But I do understand that if we have to make a choice, the torture one is egregious. It affects our reputation around the world. And I do think that it's a clear-cut case of intentional lawbreaking, starting with John Yoo's memos and Jay Bybee's and right on down the line.
Yes.
Ari, what do you think the appetite is in the Obama administration for full-throated investigation, even if it's limited to the scope that Scott Horton suggests?
I think the appetite is very low. I think this will take public pressure and vigilance. You know, the caller is right on, and thank you for bringing it up, and we have to continue to press it. I think that this is a matter where, especially with the economy and foreign policy on the front burner in the first 100 days, it's going to take consistent public advocacy and pressure, and it's going to take people who support or voted for Obama in really making their voices heard, and we do have an administration now coming in that will be more open to it. And again, a serious point about the torture, unlike surveillance, we already have people who served in our military who were prosecuted and are sitting in jail right now for torture. So the question is not whether we should ever prosecute. That started. The question is whether the Bush administration actually responsibly prosecuted the right people or made low-level soldiers take the fall for high-level orders, memorandum, and legalization or encouragement of torture. So I think we have to go up the chain of command and we have to prosecute.
The other thing that may be beyond their control is the investigation that was started by Mukasey, appointing this prosecutor from New England named Dennehy, who is now investigating the firing of the U.S. attorneys. And she's got a grand jury. She's got subpoenas. She seems to be targeting Karl Rove and other high-level decision-makers who were part of the team that made the decisions to fire U.S. attorneys for political reasons. They also made decisions to retain U.S. attorneys who followed orders and filed phony voter fraud prosecutions as ordered by justice or perhaps from the White House directly. So I think that's one that we may see some disclosures and some further revelations because I don't think the Obama team has a way of choking that one off.
No, they cannot stop that. And Congressman Nadler and others are asking for a similar special prosecutor to either look at rule of law abuses in general or to take some of the top issues, as we've discussed, torture and surveillance, and have that be a special prosecutor model. I think out of the range of options, that's a very good one. Everyone remembers that Fitzgerald did a pretty good job under tough circumstances and was largely independent. Nothing's perfect, but largely independent. And that might be the best thing for President Obama to basically leave some room for a true independent investigation that then will take on its own gravity and not necessarily be as likely to be criticized as being his political project because it will be independent.
Yeah. Ari Melber with us. He writes for The Nation. Read his work at thenation.com. Now, Ari, you're my Netroots guy, too. I hope you don't mind. I wanted to ask you about the activity over at the Obama website, change.gov. I think it's interesting to ask average citizens to hop on a website and tell this incoming presidency what they want to see. But I've heard some discouraging comments that posts about a windfall profits tax on oil companies and also a series of posts demanding a new investigation into 9/11 apparently have been scrubbed from the website. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I think it's a very important point you make. During the campaign, there's no doubt that Obama was the most open, and I did some research and writing about this, in allowing a great range of commentary and protest. I don't think anyone yet has been able to do, a full study of where that's going on their current site. But I know that they shut down YouTube comments on some of those early addresses he made to The Nation, and you're raising this matter, which again, I don't personally know, haven't looked at that. I think the larger point here is that people have to be, very engaged, but also very skeptical and demanding in how these technologies work, because they're supposed to work for us, and they should be open and free, and they should be transparent in what they're doing. And for some listeners who think, well, okay, comments, what's the big deal? Actually, it's very powerful when politicians let their supporters and detractors engage with them online and share that attention in space. It gives voices of dissent a much larger role. So it's actually quite important if we have an open model there, and it's quite disturbing if the editing becomes political or stifling.
Well, and Ari, as you and I discussed and you reported earlier this year, Obama disappointed me, and he, in fact, pissed me off by countering his pledge and voting for the FISA bill, despite its inclusion of immunity for the phone companies that he said was a deal-breaker for him. But after that, when people used the MyBarackObama.com opportunity and posted their objections to that, they not only permitted them to be posted and left them there, but Obama wrote a lengthy response to it, which showed that while he didn't change his position, he was certainly taking into account the views of those who disagreed with him.
That's right. His response was double the length of the original statement he gave to the press. he basically was drawn into a more detailed policy-oriented conversation with his supporters than he had through the media or through, of course, some of the TV-style debates and sound bites. So it was a very good thing for democracy, even if he didn't change his mind. And again, going to the technology, they had an open platform that would allow people to join groups, self-organize, and then email each other through thousands of people across the beginning of that surveillance group. Now, if you went and tried to buy thousands of targeted political emails, it would cost you a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So it's very tangible that they were willing to share that much. Most political groups in both parties do not. I mean, both candidates, but even, you know, try to get a bunch of emails from the ACLU because you want to self-organize. They won't give them to you. So that was a great step. And we do need to be vigilant about encouraging them to carry that on in government.
Well, and I never checked the privacy policy at mybarackobama.com to see if I logged in and commented on FISA that they'd save my email and add it to their database.
Probably.
We'll continue in just a moment. We're talking with Ari Melber from The Nation. And I want to ask him next, when will Obama appoint a real progressive to a top-level post? We'll talk about that as we continue on The Peter B. Collins Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Thea with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. On Dolan Road at Highway 1, there was a three-vehicle traffic collision with an ambulance responding. CHP is on the scene. And on the southbound 101, just north of County Road G11, there is a dog running in the right lane, so watch out for him. In Santa Cruz, on Soquel Drive at Ledyard Way, we have a collision with no injuries. Taking a look at the Hollister-Gilroy area, on the northbound 101 at Coyote Creek Bridge, there is a man walking on the right-hand shoulder. Look out for him. In weather, we're having an absolutely gorgeous afternoon. Tonight will be mostly clear with lows in the 40s. Sunset is at 4:51 p.m. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a fabulous afternoon. The Peter B. Collins Show is coming right back.
Hi, this is Cynthia from the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore. Our environment here on the beautiful Central Coast is an intricate, vital system teeming with life. At Pilgrim's Way, awareness of the natural world has motivated us to expand our vision about community. Our mission? To educate, empower, inspire, and enliven. Think community. Think Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden, your resource for conscious living. Between 5th and 6th on Dolores in Carmel, call 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain in your body. With six professionals, Cornerstone offers hormone balancing for men and women, all natural, no side effects. With our bodies filled with toxins and aches and pains, this approach works. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic neck pain for years. Trina Hammack uses a technique called quantum biofeedback, which to me is a miracle. I feel better and better each day, physically and mentally. Cornerstone offers lymphatic drainage, infrared saunas, ionic foot baths, massage, estheticians, and body strengthening specifically for your body so you'll start living pain-free naturally. Tired of taking medicine? Homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils are used. Finally, an alternative that works. Cornerstone Wellness Center, 1088 Cass Street, Monterey. Call today, 373-6204, 373-6204, or go to cornerstonewellnesscenter.com.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nikan Robinson. Four on three up the left side. Jamal Boykin, the open floor, goes in and Vidy and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
Cal Bears are on a slow wagon train headed for Missouri. They'll be there Sunday for a morning game here at 10:30 a.m. Sunday, December 7th.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. A little traveling music from U2 and the late Johnny Cash.
I went out walking through streets paved with gold. Lifted some stones, saw the skin and bones of a city without a soul. I went out walking under an atomic sky, where the ground won't turn and the rain it burns like the tears when I said goodbye. Yeah, I went with nothing, nothing but the thought of you. I went wandering.
And in August, the New York Times announced that they were trying to recruit Bono, the lead singer of U2 with the fabulous Specs, to write an op-ed column every week for the New York Times. It'd certainly be an upgrade if Bill Kristol is displaced. Haven't heard anything more about that. We continue with Ari Melber from The Nation and TheNation.com. And Ari, I've been squirming. As all of these centrist Democrats and holdovers from the Clinton administration and pro-war types have been recruited into the Obama change administration. And I've been chafing a little bit because I didn't expect that it would be populated by all people who agree with me. But so far, we haven't seen any significant progressives appointed to a top-level post. Melody Barnes, who's been at the Center for American Progress and has been appointed to the Domestic Policy Council, comes closest. What's your sense about whether or not Obama feels he owes the progressives who put him over the top in Iowa, who supported him when he was an unknown candidate just because he was against the war, primarily? Do you think that he's going to address our concerns before the full team is fleshed out?
Well, let me say one thing. I do think that that Susan Rice is a pretty progressive figure. Do you disagree with that?
It remains to be seen for me. You know, her ties to the Kerry campaign in 04, I didn't think really distinguished her. I interviewed her in Denver at the Democratic Convention, and I found her charming, and she answered my first question very well, which was, who do you lobby for? That was a reference to Randy Schuneman's lobbying for Georgia. But then I asked her about policy toward Georgia, and I didn't really hear anything different from Randy Schuneman's point of view. So I'm open-minded on that, but so far I can't quite label her a progressive.
All right. I think of her and Samantha Power as people who come from a progressive wing of the party who were not welcome in the Clinton 90s. I mean, Susan Rice, of course, served in the National Security Council, but was not a part of the mainstream Clintonian group, and that's reflected in her very early alliance with Barack Obama over Clinton in the primary, and who, of course, also have been very strong on human rights and humanitarian intervention.
Yeah.
Not that that's automatically left either. It really depends. But that's sort of two points on them.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, the general thrust of your assessment is correct, and it's been remarked upon. Mm-hmm. I don't think Barack Obama believes that he owes the left much of anything. I don't believe that he is making cabinet appointments based on paying back supporters of much of any kind. If anything, he seems to be consolidating. I mean, the Clinton pick was striking precisely because he spent so little time, in my opinion, probably too little time, reaching out to her and her supporters after the nomination was sewn up. And I think that was probably because, of course, it took so long that he felt he had to move on, but not even rhetorically. Yeah. And yet, here, once he wins, he goes over and does that and is trying to consolidate the Democratic Party, which, is, of course, I'm not suggesting is the only rationale, but it seems to be with that and with the outreach to economic conservatives, with the praise he's gotten from basically the CNBC crowd, that would show that he has so far prioritized that kind of outreach over the left. I think that's clear.
Yeah. Well, the one bright spot that I'm seeing, and I'm hopeful about this one, is Javier Becerra, a Democratic congressman from the Los Angeles area, who I've talked with on many occasions, is a real progressive. And the talk is that he'll be made the trade representative. And with many of the issues raised about NAFTA and other trade agreements during the campaign, I do consider this promising. And not just throwing a bone to progressives, but I would consider this an excellent appointment.
I think so, too. There was a good New York Times article about that today. I do think as well that, you know, we are seeing a lot of the traditional arguments of progressives moving into, you know, the center or the general tenor of American debate regardless of the cabinet, which is not to say that that's an excuse, but it is striking. Everything from how these CEOs travel, you know, by jet to Washington and everywhere else, mm-hmm. to the ratio of salary from the top paid individuals to workers. These are issues that you've seen touted in magazines like my own, The Nation, and The Progressive, and on your show and others, for a very long time, and because of the moral and social justice arguments, and also for some of the plain economic arguments that you overpay people at the top and you have a culture of corruption and you have no accountability, they're actually less likely to be in touch and run their organizations well and even be responsible to shareholders. We've seen that in multiple industries.
Yeah. Ari, I'm out of time, but thank you very much. Ari Melber writes for The Nation. Read his work at thenation.com. Thanks, Ari.
So, thanks.
Paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The battered U.S. economy lost more than 500,000 jobs last month.
These are losses of historic proportions. This is the worst economic contraction since the Great Depression.
University of Maryland economist Peter Morici. It's not a depression, at least not yet, but everyone acknowledges now that we're in a recession.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. For the first time, President Bush has used the word recession to describe the nation's economic situation. There was no way to avoid it following release of the latest jobless numbers.
This is in large part because of severe problems in our housing, credit, and financial markets.
Mr. Bush said it would take time for his administration's actions to affect the economy. Any major impact won't be seen until after he leaves office. President-elect Obama plans a massive stimulus plan, but economists say that could take months to kick in.
In a statement today, Mr. Obama said the economic crisis is likely to get worse before it gets better. Given this bad news, you'd think the stock market would take a dive, but the Dow finished 259 points higher today at 86.35, and the Nasdaq gained 63 points.
The economy gave the stock market its best shot today.
Jack Gage of Forbes magazine says the job numbers raised hopes that Washington will take bold action soon to get the economy back on track. And with stock prices so low, there's almost nowhere to go but up.
The market where it's positioned right now is very resilient, that a lot of the bad news is baked in.
The top executives of GM, Ford, and Chrysler left Capitol Hill today without assurances they'll get government loans. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
Congress is no closer to a solution despite all the talk this week about the need to keep the auto industry alive. Alabama Republican Spencer Baucus thinks auto companies should simply restructure.
A solution not by Congress, I'm proposing, but by the industry itself.
Panel Chairman Barney Frank warns doing nothing would be a disaster. GM CEO Rick Wagner was asked whether a company failure would trigger more mortgage failures.
That's an absolute certainty, and it would go far beyond our employees. It would be dealer employees and supplier employees.
The Big Three execs admitted they could get by with less than the $34 billion now on the table until March, if need be. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Reportedly, the White House and congressional leaders are talking about a compromise solution. O.J. Simpson will spend at least 9 years in prison, CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports.
For O.J. Simpson, his legal luck finally ran out here in Las Vegas. 2 months after he was found guilty of armed robbery and kidnapping, the former football star was sentenced.
The first-degree kidnapping with use of a deadly weapon,
a fixed term of 15 years.
One by one, Judge Jackie Glass read the sentences. Moments earlier, Simpson, near tears, insisted he did not want to hurt anyone.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal anything from anybody.
The sentence was harsh, but it could have been much worse. Simpson could have been sentenced to life in prison. Steve Futterman, CBS News, at the county courthouse in Las Vegas.
The price of oil down another $3 today to $40.81 a barrel. This is CBS News.
CNN, Thursday night, December 11th. From the network that brought you the award-winning Planet in Peril, the investigation continues. Planet in Peril, Battle Lines. Anderson Cooper.
I'm Anderson Cooper off the coast of Cape Town, South Africa.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta deep in the forest of Cameroon.
And Lisa Ling.
I'm Lisa Ling in Taiwan.
Take you to the front lines of the ultimate battles over our natural resources. A CNN worldwide investigation. Planet in Peril, Battle Lines. December 11th, 9 p.m. Eastern on CNN.
Time to go shop, shop till you drop. Traffic's a mess, has me distressed. No need to pout, Nuvi will reroute. Sale ends at 2, Nuvi gets me through. Miss traffic jam, Nuvi has a plan. No standing still, back road's a thrill. Look for the T on the Nuvi navigation tool. Even saves you fuel. Give a, give a, give a, give a Garmin. Give a, give a, give a, give a Garmin. Nuvi with a T puts your mind at ease. Garmin.com, Garmin.com. Traffic data not available in all areas.
Henry Gustav Mollison is dead. He will be remembered as the man who couldn't remember. CBS's Sam Litzinger has his story.
He was known as Henry M. or H.M. in the scientific literature. Henry Mollison has died at a Connecticut nursing home at age 82. He'd lived for decades with profound amnesia and had lost the ability to form new memories. Researchers who studied him discovered that memory could be localized to a specific part of the brain, a part that wasn't working right for Henry M., whose memories stopped when he became ill in the 1940s. After that, every experience was brand new for him. Even in death, Henry M. will help science. His brain will be preserved for future study. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
In Sheboygan, Wisconsin, the owner of a morbidly obese border collie has been arrested on suspicion of animal neglect. The dog was left out overnight in single-digit temperatures and froze to the sidewalk. Experts say most dogs wouldn't have survived, but this one was insulated by layers of fat. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to perform holiday magic. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Get exclusive holiday decorations like stunning Christmas trees, ornaments, lights, and more. Step 2. Create a holiday wonderland inside and out. Step 3. Notice how it all fits nicely within your budget, which is every bit as magical as flying reindeer.
Right now, get up to 50% off select holiday decorations at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
You're a small business person, so you're the buyer, the seller, the bean counter, the chief cook, and the bottle washer. You know your best new business comes from your current customers. But what's the best way to reach them? ConstantContact.com, the easy, effective email marketing service. Constant Contact gives you professional online newsletters fast, without any technical skills. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial and plans as low as $15 a month. ConstantContact.com, the smart way to build your business.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Your own protection. You better make the connection. Cause we ain't gonna let them steal the election.
It's our election protection hour on the PBC show.
So you think this machine is democratic? All slick and clean and automatic. A paperless process right there on the touch screen.
Well, Oprah doesn't think so.
But you never hear the tabulator tweaking. Late at night after you was all sleeping. A wham bam scam and the program flips it from a cane.
We're going to take a look at tabulators later this hour.
Your own protection. You better make the connection. Cause I ain't gonna let them steal the election.
Here on the Peter B. Collins Show, we started talking about election integrity issues a few years back, and we promised to stop when the problem is corrected. We ain't stopping. And Brad Friedman continues to be our go-to guy, the citizen journalist and proprietor of bradblog.com, returning after a couple of weeks away. Hey, Brad, how you doing today?
Doing very well. Still away, actually. Out somewhere in the Midwest here, and going to be traveling around for the next few weeks, but happy to touch base with you again, as I hope to every Friday, even while we're on the road here for a while.
And how's that blogger's wrist doing?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Actually, a bit of rest has done me some good. It still hurts, so I'm still trying to stay away as much as I can from the blog, but I'm not very successful. There's just too much going on. So I keep jumping in, whether I like it or not.
There sure is. And maybe we ought to get you some voice-to-text gizmo so that you could just dictate, and then, of course, you'd have to correct all the things that the computer can't understand.
And I'd be in worse shape than I'd have more typos than I already do, so I probably should.
Well, Brad, later this hour, Carolyn Cernich is going to return to our program. She's in charge of the election process in Humboldt County, California, the home of KGOE, one of our great radio affiliates, and a lot of activists there who got active and started the Transparency Project, and it turned up some very interesting anomalies that show the Diebold or Premier's tabulating system has some problems. So we'll talk about that a little later, and kudos to the election protection activists in Humboldt County. But I wanted to start off in Georgia because the runoff occurred this week, and I got to hold my nose as I say this, but Saxby Chambliss won. And
yes.
He won
yeah.
by more than 15 points over the Democrat. And so the media will conclude, Brad, that was a free, fair, honest, transparent election because, well, the gap was so big that it couldn't have been riddled with problems.
Yes, as I like to say, Diebold reported this week that Saxby Chambliss won the election down in Georgia. And, well, we have no choice but to just believe them, whether it's true or not. And as you mentioned, with Carolyn Cernich, we'll talk about some problems with Diebold that would have affected, potentially even affected the election down there in Georgia. But we're using 100% unverifiable voting machines across the entire state of Georgia. And so it's quite frustrating, actually, to someone like me because we get these results, and we pretty much have to say, okay, I guess they're right. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no way to know whether that's the case or not. You'll recall, Peter, during the primary season when we would go into the various states, like South Carolina and so forth, where they used touchscreen machines across the entire state, all you could do is just whatever the results came out with, you just had to say, okay, I guess they're right. There's no way of knowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what were some of the other issues in Georgia? Because there was a massive effort to suppress the vote, to boot people off the registration rolls.
Oh, yeah. Well, you had extraordinary purging going on prior to the general election. This Karen Handel, the Secretary of State out there in Georgia, was just terrible. And they had, at some places, you know, 6, 8, 10-hour lines to vote, even during early voting. Largely, as I understand, because of problems with the Diebold registration computers out there that were slowing things up, that were a real bottleneck. And we're seeing that, by the way, more and more. I think as you saw lines becoming a feature, long lines becoming a feature all over the country this year during these elections, it's because they've made the registration process so needlessly complex and have often relied on these new computers that also don't work, just like the voting machines, that in many cases you had voting machines that were available for use, but the bottleneck was at the registration process, and people, as you know, cannot wait 3, 6, 8, 10 hours. They often can't wait an hour or two because it's a work day on Tuesday when we go to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a problem. As well, we have concerns going back in Georgia, and specifically the Saxby Chambliss, going back to 2002 with that election when Chambliss originally won in a surprise victory.
He took the Senate seat.
He took the Senate seat. Well put.
We won't say that he won. He took the Senate seat.
You see why I have trouble describing it. He took the Senate seat in 2002, and that caused, just prior to this runoff election, Cliff Arnebeck, an attorney out of Ohio, to file a document hold with the Georgia Secretary of State asking her to keep the chips, the cards, the memory cards and so forth from these machines, because he is building a case, as you know, beginning, it started with Ohio 2004, but now spreading out all over the country as far as building a civil RICO complaint against Karl Rove and friends. So now he's trying to get material out of Georgia as he's building this case across the country.
Now, Brad, since you mentioned Cliff Arnebeck and the heist of 2004, since the election is a good month behind us now, what are your thoughts about the very proximity that Mike Connell was forced to submit to a deposition by attorney Cliff Arnebeck on the day before the election? And that very night, Karl Rove changed his prediction. The week before, he had said that McCain was going to win and the results were going to come in late at night and yada, yada, yada. And by election eve, he had changed his tune and was predicting privately and I think on the Fox News channel that there weren't enough votes there for McCain. Do you see any connection between Mike Connell's deposition and Karl Rove's change of prediction?
Well, you know, I certainly see dots. Whether they can be connected, I'll leave to the people who are looking. It was, you know, the fact that Mike Connell, after how he was involved in the 2004 election, was called just 24 hours before that election, before the general election this year, to testify. And he fought, believe you me, he fought considerably to keep from that having to occur before he was given this judge's order. The fact that he did is certainly notable. I see. I know that folks have said exactly what you said, that Karl Rove was changed his prediction that night. Do those two dots connect? I don't know. But and as you know, I only report generally what I can actually prove. But it certainly is notable. So I will leave it to the speculators out there to do what they do and speculate.
Yeah, you know, you're really holding yourself back career-wise, Brad. This thing about facts, I'm sorry, you can't be a journalist if all you're going to do is report facts.
Well, I could go into an entire hour with you on that. You make a joke, but you might be right. I think I could go out on a few more limbs here and probably make a lot more noise, but I don't think that's the right thing to do. Go figure.
Here's Bradness with us this hour. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and he's also featured in this new documentary. We've been giving away DVDs to our new listeners in Boston all week. It's called Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, and if you call from Boston, you automatically get a copy if you get on the air, and if you call from anywhere else within the sound of my voice this hour while Brad's on with us, we'll reward you too. I've got a stack of these DVDs, and my toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You may have a question about the way the recent election was conducted or some of these really tight races. Feel free to bring it on. We'll do our best. 888-573-8372. Brad, the latest from Minnesota, please.
Oh, boy. Minnesota is it's a hell of a fight, and you got to go, well, there's sort of three different points of view here. You got the Franken point of view, the Coleman point of view, and the media point of view, which is actually, I'm happy to say, since I've been on the road and haven't been able to follow every single beat, the media this time around is actually doing a pretty good job of it, in no small part because they've got a very transparent system up there in Minnesota. Now, if you listen to Al Franken, he says, I believe the last numbers I saw, he believes he is up by 10 votes. This is out of 2.9 million cast.
Yeah.
I even saw 4 votes up at one point. Coleman has himself up at, I don't know, 251 or 300 or Lord knows what, and the media puts it around 250 as well. What you need to remember when you're looking at this race and you're hearing this information coming out of Minnesota is that there were some 6,000 ballots that were challenged by both sides. Now, Al Franken has recently pulled back about 600 of his challenges, and Coleman, of course, it's a tit-for-tat thing out there. He pulled back some of his challenges as well. So Franken's numbers come from Franken's best guesses as to how those challenged ballots will ultimately be adjudicated by the state canvassing board. That's not going to happen till next week. I believe it's actually next Friday. So we still won't know until next Friday what the official numbers are It's unbelievably close, closer than Florida 2000. But unlike Florida 2000, this time they've got a Secretary of State who actually gives a damn, and they're actually counting the ballots, which I find to be quite refreshing in an election, Peter.
Now, as we're speaking here on Friday, December 5th, this was supposed to be the day that the Minnesota recount was to be completed.
Well, and it was. I think there's actually a few more counties left, but it's generally completed except for those challenged ballots. So the numbers that they're talking about do not include those challenged ballots. So what Norm Coleman had been doing was challenging all sorts of ballots, basically to fight the PR war, to give the impression that he was maintaining or even at some points growing his lead. Now, some of these challenges were ridiculous. He was actually, Norm Coleman was actually challenging ballots that had a vote for John McCain and Al Franken on the grounds that the voter must have made a mistake when they voted for Al Franken, since they were a John McCain voter. It was extraordinary. And
Now, wait a minute. Everybody knows about Norm Coleman's paranormal powers.
Yes, that's right. And he used those paranormal powers, actually, even to challenge ballots that had votes for John McCain, but no vote at all in the U.S. Senate race, and he was trying to claim those ballots belonged to him as well.
Now, that's not paranormal. That's just a sense of entitlement.
Or stupidity.
We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman. Lines are open if you have a question or comment about elections. 888-5-PETER-B. This one is for Saxby.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle a..."
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
KRXA 540 AM is the home of Cal State University Monterey Bay basketball. Hi, this is Rob Hunt, the voice of the CSUMB Otters, inviting you to join KRXA as we bring you the best of NCAA Division II basketball with the CSUMB Otters.
It's game day at last. Cal State University Chico is at the Kelp Bed tonight. CSUMB is hosting, and so is KRXA 540. 7 p.m. tonight.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Good evening, this is Thea Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Taking a look at the northbound 101 at Messick Road, there is an elderly man in the center divider. Please watch out for him. CHP is on the way. We have a traffic hazard on the southbound 1 at Reservation Road. There is a vehicle going backwards on the right shoulder. Taking a look at Santa Cruz, we have two traffic collisions. The first one is at 2241 Paul Mini Court, and the next one is on Soquel Drive at Ledger Way. A CHP unit is on the scene there. Moving over to the Hollister-Gilroy area on the southbound 101 just south of Coyote Creek Golf Drive, there is a no-injury collision and the road is currently being cleared. That's your traffic on KRXA 540 AM. Have a wonderful evening. The Peter B. Collins Show will return in a moment.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. in San Francisco. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. And you can talk with me and Brad Friedman this hour about election issues. We got a free DVD for callers this hour. It's Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, a Clint Curtis story featuring the sleuthing and journalistic investigation of Brad Friedman. That's something I can recommend to you. And, Brad, I want to catch up on a couple of things on the blog that we didn't get to talk about in your absence. One is, I want to credit you that you were the first to raise questions about Barack Obama's selection of Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona for the post as Secretary of Homeland Security. Not because you're against her in any way, but because the vacancy as governor there would be filled not by a lieutenant governor, but by Secretary of State Jan Brewer. Why should we be concerned about that?
Well, this woman, and it's getting hard because there's so many worst secretaries of state in the country at this point, but Jan Brewer is certainly up there with them. She is the woman who has, she's called election integrity advocates out there in Arizona. She's called them anarchists and conspiracy theorists. Of course, that's an old favorite, but she actually called them anarchists when they showed up and held up signs complaining about the fact that she had brought Diebold touchscreen systems into the state long after all of the flaws or many of the flaws in those Diebold systems had already been known. Meanwhile, the folks down in Arizona, particularly in Pima County, Tucson, have made an heroic effort over the years to go to court to get Diebold databases that store the way that voters have voted, to make the case that those are, in fact, public records. She has fought them really every step of the way. Her office has continued to do so. And so in elevating her now to the governor, that can only be bad news for the folks of, for the voters of Arizona. But, you know, she's also a hard right-wing nut, pardon me, and to replace a good Democratic governor out there with this nutcase, and I feel just fine in calling her that, given that she called my friends anarchists, I think is a real concern. They've essentially, given that governorship 2 years before she was to run for re-election, given that over to an incumbent Republican now, got to question what kind of a good idea that was.
Yeah, and when you look at Obama, his seat in Illinois will be filled by a Democratic governor. Hillary Clinton's Senate seat will be filled by a Democratic governor, and Joe Biden's seat will be filled by a Democratic governor. So in those cases, there's no ripple effect from the vacancies created by their advancement.
That's right. This is the only place, as far as I know, so far, where that's happening. There's still some appointments to come, but yeah, so I'd be very troubled if I was folks in Arizona, and you know, I consider, frankly, Arizona a swing state. I know that a lot of people felt, oh, it's John McCain's state, it's solidly red, I say don't buy it. That thing could have gone, that thing probably would have gone Democratic this year had it not been for John McCain on the ticket.
And Brad, I want to give you credit because you broke a story several years back that resurfaced about a week ago. And that is that the White House has repeatedly scrubbed websites. And the latest was a revelation that the list of the Coalition of the Willing, or what we call the Coalition of the Billing, was altered at different times. And that it may have actually been illegally removed from government websites. And you broke this way on back there in 2004.
Yeah, I did, and I saw this story today, and you know, I saw the headline that the White House altered Iraq War documents, and I thought, wow, this is going to be a hot news story. And it turned out to be this was the first story that the Brad blog broke that really went national, and that was the removal of these documents from the White House website that were listing the Coalition of the Willing. This was back prior to the 2004 election during the vice presidential debates, and it made quite a bit of noise back then. And, of course, I guess they have now rebroken the same story 4 years later because some university professor has decided to notice it.
Well, but they didn't have room for eight letters to credit Brad Blog.
But that's right. Do they ever? Always the bridesmaid, Peter.
We're going to take a break and return. And Humboldt County Chief of Voting, I don't know her exact title, but Carolyn Cernich will be joining us next. And we're going to talk about the interesting project with the Transparency Project, citizens who counted votes alongside the official count and proved that the Diebold Premier tabulator was wrong. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell, putting the service back in service stations.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, A Monpot treasure at your service for 70 years.
Protect your investment. Custom painting. Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, partial of progressive politics and electric guitars. We continue our Election Integrity Hour with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Up next, we're going to take a look at an interesting citizens group in Eureka, California, Humboldt County, that did some vote counting, and it shamed Diebold.
Shake it upside down. And every stinking bum should wear a crown. And I cry for love till all the plates are broken. Cry for love till my eyes are soaking. Yeah.
We continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show, coast to coast, and a shout out to our new listeners in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on AM 1510, all up and down New England. Great to have you with us. And you can call into the program toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 1-385-73-8372. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and we are joined by Carolyn Cernich. She spells her last name C-N-R-I-C-H.
Nope.
C-R-N, sorry.
Thank you. Pretty close.
I was skipping a vowel there, and I skipped a consonant, too.
You were going to offer to buy her a vowel, weren't you?
Yeah. C-R-N-I-C-H. And I know you are in charge of voting, but your title's bigger than that, right, in Humboldt County?
My title is different than that. I'm the county clerk and recorder and registrar of voters.
There we go. I knew your purview was greater than just the election issues.
Yeah.
Now, Carolyn, we invited you on the program today because we got some very positive reports from citizen activists in Humboldt County about the Election Transparency Project that you permitted. And I first want to thank you for allowing citizens to participate in this process in the manner that you did. It essentially, correct me if I have this wrong, but it seems like a real-time audit of the work that your professionals did using the Diebold/Premier GEMS tabulators. And the result produced an interesting outcome, which is that it appears that the GEMS tabulators got the vote count wrong by somewhere around 200 votes.
Yes, that's right. And thank you for thanking me, I guess. But
well, you're welcome, yeah, but do you know how unusual this is? Do you know that you're not a defensive bureaucrat who is, you know, I mean, so many of people in your position who we've talked to are very leery of citizen participation. They're leery of having their work reviewed or audited.
And some of them are downright arrogant, Carolyn. And so I just have to say that you're different, and we appreciate that.
Well, it's not that I try to be different or anything. It's just that I'm an elected official, too, and I think it's at least part of my job to listen to my constituents and to try to work with them, and here we are.
Yeah, Brad?
Actually, I'd like to add my thanks there because I know, Carolyn, that you have been for years now going back and forth with the election integrity folks out there in Humboldt, sometimes going well. Sometimes you guys have been at odds about things, but I know that the fact that you have stuck with it and this program that, if I recall, Carolyn, you were actually looking at doing this project where you make these ballots as pretty much as they're scanned, available up on the web for people to actually see. You were looking at doing this back in 2006, as I recall, and at the time, or maybe it was 07, you were told that it couldn't be done because it could lead to vote buying and so forth if there were identifying marks on the ballot. I wanted to find out why you were able now to do that, unlike in previous years. And if, you know, if there was any changes made or if folks just realized, well, hell, we already do 40% of our ballots by absentee, so you can sell them that way much easier. How did that come about?
Well, I think that was part of the convincing that we did. But additionally, in 2006, when we came up with the idea, or perhaps even before that, what we envisioned, first of all, was that it be a system freestanding from any proprietary software of any kind, and that we make it available to everyone, and not just, you know, the committee or anything like that, but to every voter in Humboldt County should have the opportunity to see every ballot. If we're hand-counting paper ballots, only the 8 or 10 people in the room at the time get to see those ballots. They don't see the ones that everybody else is counting. So the idea was to give everybody an opportunity to see every ballot that's counted in Humboldt County. But what's changed in the meantime is that we have acquired an off-the-shelf kind of high-speed, high-end scanner. And then also joining our committee was Mitch Trachtenberg, who is a programmer and very interested in the subject, and he did what others I know have spent their career chasing grants to do, and that was to write for us pro bono a browser in open source that would allow us to count the votes that were on the ballots.
Now, open source, isn't that some sort of a violation of election protocols in this country? Does it have to be privatized and owned by a corporation?
Well, we don't consider this our primary ballot counting election program.
Understood.
This is an audit program separate and apart from that. And unlike, I think it was in Arizona that an elections official wanted to do something similar to this in place of the audit that's mandated by the state. That's my understanding, and I may be wrong on that. But this is something that we do in addition to all of those required audits of our official canvas of an election.
We're talking with Carolyn Cernich in Humboldt County, California, here on the Peter B. Collins Show, along with Brad Friedman. And, Carolyn, I have a report here from a member of the Transparency Project, ETP, Election Transparency Project. And let me just recap this and then get your comments on it. According to this, they did this process where they scanned ballots separately from your process, and their system came up with initially 216 more ballots than the Premier GEMS system tabulated. And it goes on to say here that deck zero appeared to be the issue. And I don't want to get too far into the weeds here and lose our listeners, but perhaps you can explain what happened with deck zero that potentially produced this discrepancy.
It's apparently not only deck zero, but let me explain the process. When you begin to scan absentee ballots into the GEMS server, they're assigned a deck number by that by the server.
Mm-hmm.
The first one being numbered deck 0, the next one being numbered deck 1, and so on.
All right.
So we created a deck 0, and we were unaware that in 2004, I believe October of 2004, there was I'll remind you that I became actively involved in the process of the Elections Department in about 2006, and prior to that we had a very capable elections manager here, so it wasn't necessary that I spend so much of my time here but on my other duties. He has since left, and I guess just didn't pass on to me. If he told me, I didn't remember.
Okay.
That there was an email from Diebold in 2004 that advised us to remove that deck. However, there's no prompting or anything like that on the screen itself. You had to be here to know that.
So it's a secret memo, so to speak.
It
was secret from you.
I don't think it was their intention to share it with the world, but it appears from the memo that I saw today that it was definitely intended for all of their clients, at least in California. I can't answer for others, but it's definitely something that they didn't try to conceal. It's just that it wasn't passed on to me.
Okay.
And so I didn't know I was supposed to delete deck 0. And so during the process of scanning batches of ballots, it's not uncommon for us to delete one manually, and it's a quality control thing because I have my ballots not only sorted into precincts but also batches of 50 so that I can watch the meter on the central count machine and verify that, okay, 50 have gone through, okay, 100 have gone through, 149 have gone through. Were there only 49 in that batch that I thought had 50?
Mm-hmm.
Or did something double feed?
Mm-hmm.
And if I find that, no, there were 150 something double fed, then I will delete that batch intentionally and start over.
Okay.
So what we didn't know also, I mean, deleting is a normal part of the job, but...
And you do understand, to the uninitiated, that sounds odd, that
you would be
tabulating, you wouldn't be deleting anything.
That's right, but that's why I went through that whole explanation.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a quality control issue that I can delete a batch that I believe was miscounted and start over again with that batch.
I see.
And so I do that.
Okay.
The decks then, the batches at the when I'm finished and satisfied that, yes, the machine got the same number that I believe are in this batch, I send an ender card through, and that commits that batch to the memory in the GEM server.
Okay.
Okay. At any point, if I realize that, I missed 5 ballots in precinct XYZ, I can either scan them as their separate batch, or I can go back and delete that batch, add those 5 to it, and do it again.
I see.
But I didn't know that if I have gone along and committed, 100 decks to the memory and deleted 5 or 6 along the way that I thought there might be an error in, that when I deleted a batch, it would more or less randomly delete that deck 0.
Mm-hmm.
So I have evidence that I scanned deck 0, 197 ballots, and that I committed that to the memory, but I couldn't find any evidence that it was deleted. But on our election night counts, it was included. But on our final tally, it was not. So our process here is that from election night, we don't do any more entering anything into the system until we have verified the number of signatures and audited that we have the correct number of ballots for the number of voters we had, and that somebody that voted in an absentee ballot didn't also send in didn't go to the polls and do a provisional ballot.
Mm-hmm.
We've done all of that audit. Now we're ready to count everything else that we've got, and we did that. We started that on November 23rd. Before we began scanning any additional decks in, we ran an additional report that should have been identical to the one that was run on election night, and it was. Those 197 ballots were in there. So, okay, we are off and running. We started scanning more ballots, and everything was fine until we were finished. And we printed a report. Looks like everything's good. High fives all around. We're done. That was on the 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Let me
ask you to pause in the narrative
there,
because I need to take a break, and
I
you
understand.
Can tell us where the whoops entered into your figuring. And Brad will let you pepper her with some questions when we return, okay? We'll take a break here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Carolyn Cernich, Registrar of Voters Plus in Humboldt County, California, and Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. More straight ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now on northbound 1, just south of Route 218, there is a two-vehicle collision with no injuries. Also, on the northbound 101, just south of Highway 183, we have a traffic collision with an ambulance responding. And on
Robin's Jewelry in Carmel is open every day for your holiday and gift shopping. Robin's Jewelry is one of a kind, unique, and stylish. She uses sterling silver and semi-precious stones and will customize a keepsake right there on the spot. Robin is a native Carmel artist and silversmith. She's located inside the Dowd Craft Studio at Ocean and San Carlos. Robin has a big selection of organic bling. Great jewelry that's affordable. With free engraving and gift wrapping, go to Robin's Jewelry in Carmel.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. Brad Friedman's with us from bradblog.com, and our special guest is Carolyn Cernich, Registrar of Voters in Humboldt County, California. That's Eureka and Arcata and Environs, the area covered by one of our great radio stations, KGOE. And Carolyn, just before the break, I had to interrupt you as you were getting to the critical point of your narrative here about the vote count coming after the November 4th elections, and how the count coming out of the Diebold tabulators was found to vary from the count conducted by the Election Transparency Project. And at what point did you discover that discrepancy?
Well, the Transparency Project scanned each ballot as two separate images, front and back of the ballot. Ours was a one-page ballot, 14 inches long, printed on both sides. So if our GEMS report indicated that we should have 64,161 ballots, twice that number should be the number of images that we have.
Okay.
And when we were finished, we had twice that number plus 433. Okay, that means a half ballot somewhere. Well, we found that was a what in the Premier system is called an Ender card, which the poll workers had run through their AccuVote at the polling place at the end of the night and just sealed in the ballot box instead of removing it. It was just a little mistake. It's not a big deal, but anyway, mm-hmm. that right. image is in there. But 433, Mitch Trachtenberg were the ones, and I were the ones that were doing that final scanning the Sunday after Thanksgiving. And he sort of offered me comfort in that, well, that's okay. It could be some technical glitch on our part. You know, sometimes something got scanned twice and maybe the first scan didn't get deleted, like it was upside down or something like that. And he said, let me look at it first before you panic and see if I can find the problem. He called me back and said, go look at this certain precinct, 2045. It seems to be low in turnout, and maybe that's where our problem is. And it was low on the turnout was low on the GEMS report, and he had a couple hundred more votes than that. Mm-hmm. So I went and found the ballots, and sure enough, there was deck zero with 197 ballots that were not included. If I added up the rest of the ballots that I found for that precinct, they're all there.
Okay. Brad, you got some questions?
I do indeed. Yeah, and this, by the way, should be of note to listeners in Boston as well, because as I recall, in Suffolk County, there's areas of Suffolk County and Massachusetts as a whole that use these very same Diebold optical scan systems. Now, the fact that Diebold, and Peter, it's not, they've changed their name to Premier, but, you know, new lipstick, same crappy voting systems, in my opinion. The fact that they sent out one email 4 years ago to warn about this problem, that it hasn't been fixed. You know, I have great concerns about that and, you know, where else this may have happened, that other election officials weren't aware of the concerns, as well as the concerns that Diebold admitted to just before the election that their central tabulator, the GEMS system, also drops votes when they are uploaded. Now, this is a great concern of mine. Have you, I know you passed it on to the Secretary of State's office. I'm wondering what their response was and whether or not you passed this on to the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, because for my money, they ought to be warning everybody about this potential flaw, because these systems are used all over the country.
Well, I think I definitely understand your concern, being kind of at ground zero here, but my call to the Secretary of State was not to blow a whistle or anything else. My concern was that on Monday, my Board of Supervisors in Humboldt County called a special meeting to for the purpose of certifying the election results that I thought still on Monday morning were probably okay. And they did that. I had certified those results. So my phone call to the Secretary of State was to say, how do I correct my mistake? This is what happened. And they were very interested in this is what happened part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not been in contact with the EAC, though the people from the Secretary of State's office thought that was important and I believe picked up the ball there.
Now, they weren't even in office in 2004. Were they aware of this problem with these Diebold machines?
No.
Yeah, this is a real problem because it makes these machines in violation of federal law.
Well, and Carolyn, let me jump in. Isn't it an affirmative responsibility of Diebold, the vendor, to make sure that that information is disseminated to the communities and the entities that use their machines?
And I suppose that I could respond to that with, they did inform the elections manager in Humboldt County at the time, but
once.
That was not me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in trying to carry on the elections process, I looked for guidance, and I didn't find that. If it's here, if it was here before this afternoon, I didn't see it. But
have
let
you
me say
that,
one other
have
thing.
Have you actually seen that email, Carolyn?
Huh? I beg your pardon?
Say again.
Have you actually seen that email from 4 years ago now?
I have now, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, it puts their system in violation of federal law, of the Help America Vote Act, as far as accuracy goes, and that they feel that, you know, one email 4 years ago suffices when obviously you're not alone in, you know, not having been around 4 years ago. An election official comes in and doesn't know this. Secretary of State of California didn't know it.
And let me jump in. Yep. We have got about 30 seconds, Carolyn. Go ahead and make your comment.
Well, one thing that bothers me more than the fact that I didn't know it is that another version of this was certified, tested and certified after they knew about it with that flaw still in it and was marketed to I don't believe it's used in California, but elsewhere. It has since been corrected in even newer versions, but it was marketed after they knew about the flaw in a newer version that had not been corrected.
I've got to wrap it up there. Carolyn Cernich, thank you for your work. Thanks for being open to working with activists. And thanks for standing up for the truth. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Brad Friedman, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Look forward to it, Peter. Thanks.
All right.
To you until we meet again. Happy trails to you.
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Moves are being made to break the deadlock over a bailout for the Detroit automakers. The White House and Democratic leaders in Congress have been talking, and reportedly they plan to meet again tomorrow. More from CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
Slowly, grudgingly, Congress seems to be moving toward consideration of some sort of auto industry recovery plan. At a House hearing, the tone was often subdued as lawmakers digested the new unemployment figures and wondered out loud what an auto industry collapse would do to joblessness. Pennsylvania Democrat Paul Kanjorski told the Big Three CEOs time is running out.
We're looking at the precipice. You're going to go over if we don't do something.
When he pressed them, they acknowledged they could survive until March with $12 billion in loans rather than the $34 billion they've requested. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Today's report from the Labor Department says the economy lost more than 500,000 jobs in November, the biggest monthly decline in 34 years.
Things are more severe than we thought they were going to be. This is a severe recession. We're in it.
Peter Sperling is professor of finance at Touro College in New York.
The market was expecting jobs to have declined by about 350,000. In fact, the number of people working in the non-farm sector dropped by over 500,000.
And CBS News correspondent Anthony Mason says it's not over.
This is the beginning of what's going to be a
you know, a period of very bad layoffs that will take us at least through probably the first quarter of next year and maybe a little bit longer. The question is, how long is this recession going to be? You know, the longest recessions in the post-World War II period have been 16 months. You know, that's what we had in the early 80s and back in the 70s. Some people think this is going to be even longer than that.
President Bush acknowledged for the first time today that we are in a recession. O.J. Simpson was practically in tears at his sentencing today.
No, I wasn't there to hurt anybody. I just wanted my personal things, and I realized now I was stupid of me. I am sorry. I didn't mean to steal anything from anybody, and I didn't know I was doing anything illegal. I thought I was confronting friends and retrieving my property.
He'll serve at least 9 years for kidnapping and armed robbery. It's a consolation to murder victim Ron Goldman's father, Fred.
Kind of a bittersweet moment, knowing that SOB is going to be in jail for...